Good morning and welcome to the February 21, 2023 meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District. We're meeting today in a morning session of study and afternoon business session, but our agenda may be short enough that we can cover both business and regular in the morning. We will find out as we progress. It's great to see so many visitors in the audience. We don't always get that. I somewhat anticipate there may be a specific item on the agenda that some of you wish to talk to this morning, and we'll give you an opportunity at the appropriate time. I'd like to remind everybody that this meeting is being recorded, and if you do choose to speak to any item on the agenda, that you come and to the microphone, state your name and address for the record, since we want to keep an accurate record of who is testifying or before us. And also would like to remind everybody that it helps us a lot if you silence any electronic devices that you have in your possession. And we have one person with us, one commissioner with us online, and we'll make sure that he remains muted until speaking moments. I'd like to say that all five commissioners are in attendance today. Our regular staff, manager of Kirk Hudson, clerk of the board, Rebecca Newman, and attorney, Eric Walquist. And it's great to see so many guests in the room. Before we go any further, I think we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance and the Safety Minute in HPI presented to us by Griselda Gonzalez.
This on?
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So, good morning. My name is Griselda Gonzalez. I'm the Energy Conservation Rep for Customer Energy Solutions. And for today's Safety Minute, I'm going to be talking about the heart health. So, February is American Heart Month, and I'll just discuss a few topics, how to maintain a healthier life and a healthier heart. With that being said, no matter where you are on your health journey, a healthier life is possible. Next slide. Go back one. Right here. There we go. Okay. So you live your life to your own beat. So when it comes to your heart health, find what works out for you. You're in charge. Your heart is your powerhouse. So just like we like to maintain our substations, power poles, transmission lines, we should do the same with our heart. And you can live to the beat of your own heart and prevent cardiovascular disease on your terms. Now, black adults are 2 times as likely as white adults to die from preventable heart disease. Now, you can take charge of your health by taking small steps to prevent heart disease and stroke. And the picture on the left from a trip that we took with my family this last winter, and those were not small steps, let me tell you. It made me realize how out of shape I am. I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't make it up that easy. No, the things that you can do is move more. You can find simple ways to get active throughout the day. You can also look into joining the Active and Fit Direct program now offered through the district. You can eat healthy, cutting back on the salt. You can get creative with spices, herbs, choose healthy fats, skip the sugar, and eat more fiber. Controlling blood pressure, it lowers your risk of memory loss and dementia, and it keeps your vision sharp. Manage your cholesterol by getting checked, eat healthy, and stay active again. Work with your doctor, be open and honest and give your doctor the facts. Ask lots of questions and make your voice heard. Managing blood sugar lowers your risk for dementia, protects your vision, and keeps you on your feet. Stress less. I know that's hard, but something we can work on. Mindful deep breathing is a simple exercise that can help you feel calmer right away. Other things that you can do are go for a simple walk. You can do yoga or even kickboxing. And last, quit smoking. Pick your quit date and mark it on your calendar. You can make it official by telling friends and family. That way they can support you. And there are additional resources and tips at the following sites, cdc.gov/heartmonth and millionhearts.hhs.gov/lift-to-the-beat. Take charge of your heart health starting today. Any questions, comments, concerns?
Commissioners?
Thank you.
Thank you. And I guess I do have one comment. You caught my attention really early in your presentation by likening our heart and circulatory system to an electrical system. I had never thought of it that way, but it makes perfect sense. So great analogy.
Thank you.
Thanks, Griselda.
Thanks, Griselda.
Thank you.
So the next item on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. And at this point, any commissioner can request that any item that's on the consent agenda be moved to the regular agenda if they want to hear more about it. And management has also takes the opportunity to recommend items that are on the regular agenda that they think could reasonably be on the consent agenda. And today they've recommended Resolution 11 be placed on the consent agenda. I'd like to operate under a basis if I hear no objection to making that change, we will just consider it done so. And any objection to that change? Hearing none, the item 11 will be moved to the consent agenda. Also, I'd like to take something that I didn't say early on for the guests in the room, that we will provide specifically on items if the public wishes to make a comment that they once again do come up. But there's a spot on our agenda at the end of the study session for public comment on other items. So if there's any member of the public here that wishes to have public comment on anything other than what's on the agenda, that time is provided at the end of the study session agenda. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Kirk for the CPO winner recognition.
Good morning. It's my pleasure to honor a couple of our employees with the January Cycle of Personal Ownership award winners. And Neil Narutzos is here. Come on up, Neil.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Andy's going to join too. Andy's one of the award winners. Thank you both for being here in person.
No, we've supported each other.
Yes, you have.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. So we'll start with Neil. Neil was nominated for some work he did on a process improvement team. And one of the things using our human and organizational performance initiative principles is we want to make sure we're demonstrating that employees are the solution, not the problem. And one of the ways we do that is when we have events that both turn out positive and events that turn out not the way we like them, we like to put together learning teams and understand, okay, what were the factors that made it go well or what were the factors that made it not turn out so well that we can improve upon. And Neil was part of one of those teams. It was Snowmageddon last year. The 2 feet of snow we got, there was a learning team that was put together after that. And I would say both from the standpoint of things turned out pretty well, but we also recognized there was room for improvement in how we communicate to our employees during significant events like that one. And in this learning team, it was mostly focused on how we do communicate to our employees. We want our employees to be safe in conditioned, all conditions, including 24 inches of snow overnight conditions. And so this learning team recognized that we need to be actually better at having some ability to communicate after hours during 3 a.m., 4 a.m. time frame. Part of the learning team, Neil, actually recognized that there's ways we can do this and came up with a great and simple way of us getting word out to employees, which was to create a hotline that they can call into. That way we can update it at 3 a.m. So that the employees that actually are getting up at 4 a.m., the ones that start early, would have some information rather than we were usually communicating to them around 6 a.m. And by then it's too late. They're on the road or they're already here. So Neil came up with a great idea to establish this hotline. It was something I won't say it was easy because I don't know if it was or not, but he got it up and running really fast. And now we're using that as a way that we can, unfortunately, Neil is the one that's up at 3 a.m. With myself and the security director, making sure we know what the message is going to be. But then Neil and his team populate the message and employees know they can call that number and get the latest information. So great example of Neil just being part of a learning team, seeing an opportunity and seeing something that could be done to improve our process and communication. So thank you, Neil.
Thank you. And I would just say that our internal communications team and our operations side, whenever we have storms or emergencies, they just really jump in and get it done. It's just been a really good experience. And to your point, there's this continuous improvement process in place. So we're really wanting to improve what we do at all times. So thank you.
And then Andy Wendell was nominated for, if you can go to the next slide, was nominated for something that Andy does on a regular basis, and a lot of people really don't recognize that he does it, but he does it on his own. And you might recall we had a significant outage up in the Leavenworth area right before Christmas, this last Christmas, 3 days before Christmas. And it was, if you remember, we had single-digit temperatures, if not below zero. Commissioner McKenna's smiling because he remembers all too well the situation. We actually had record loading on our system, and actually part of our system actually failed early in the morning. And so what Andy does when we have widespread outages, and again, nobody has to tell him, he just makes his way up there. And recognizes that there's an opportunity to provide information both to the public and to also identify where he, with his knowledge of our system and his engineering background, can find ways to actually help our employees out in the field at the same time. And so Andy did what he always does. He went up there and found couple of significant loads on the system that he was able to help facilitate them moving off to diesel generation to help when the power did get restored, it would keep the system on during the cold load pickup scenario. And he also opened up the Leavenworth office. He and John Stoll did, and they provided food and a place for people to come in if they wanted to charge phones. And then he just went out and about through neighborhoods, providing information to the customers on what was happening and what the challenges were and when we would expect restoration. So, the crews often are quite visible and they get a lot of thanks, which well deserved, to be out working in single digit temperatures. And then there's other employees like Andy that are out there as well that are probably less visible, but helping the crews and helping the customers at the same time. So I'm really happy you were nominated for this. Because you do this on a regular basis, and it's huge in terms of the value it provides for the customers and the workforce. So thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Kirk. I appreciate that very much. The four values on the wall over here, safety, stewardship, trustworthiness, and operational excellence, is what we focus on every day when we come to work. Our customer service team leans in on that trustworthiness all the time, and that means being in the communities, visiting with stakeholders, customers, being transparent about what's going on and what we're doing to correct those actions, or why we're in a neighborhood doing construction, what have you. It's a very satisfying part of my job, and what I appreciate about it is it's not just checking a box for us as a utility. It's a culture here about being one with our community. I have a tremendous amount of support from my bosses, you, John Stoll, others, to get out there in the community and do what we do best. I also feel that I've been honored to have a commission and a board for my tenure here that really supports community outreach and getting out there in the community as well. In fact, many of you have been out there doing that. We've been shoulder to shoulder doing that in the communities in many instances. And so it makes my job a lot easier knowing that I have that support and that ongoing support as well. So thank you very much.
I have kind of a funny story to share. Before I do that, Neil, I want to let you know that I appreciate everybody on the team communicating. When we have outages, the commissioners know about them, so it's really helpful. I had during the outage, Andy, I don't think I told you this, but there's an elderly lady up the street that got a hold of me and said, this nice young man came and knocked on my door to check on me. And who was that? You know, was he in a line crew and had all the equipment on? And no, it was just a guy regularly dressed and just checking on everybody. And so anyway, a nice young man.
Really? I really don't care about the nice part, but the young.
Any other commissioner comments?
Well, I just think it's fabulous when somebody in leadership position is out there doing the hard work, because it's so easy to just expect it of other staff members and not to be the ones up at 3 a.m. and getting out there. So to lead by example is fascinating. It's wonderful, and I applaud you for that. Keeps the team going. Mm-hmm.
I would just like to add something to it. So, you know, you talk about the culture of the PUD. You guys are the culture, and you're providing that for the public. So, you know, good job. You know, slap on the back, because this is what our culture is, and it's you people that are out in the front line. So, thank you.
And I just have to add that you both have exemplified some of the best traits that I think of when I think of public power, of being part of the community and attempting to serve the community. And that's just super. We're different than private power. Thank you for what you do.
Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you both.
All right. Okay, the next item is Fifth Street redevelopment. Before I let Kirk say anything, I'd like to suggest to my fellow commissioners, I anticipate there will be a desire for some public input on this, and maybe we'll hear a presentation, we might hear a recommendation. If we have questions of our staff, we should pose them at that point in time, and before we start having any discussion, allow public input before that, and then do our whatever deliberations we may or may not do. Does that work? Okay, very good.
So with us, we have Dan Frazier and David Lodge. They're the two that have spearheading the effort here of the Fifth Street redevelopment. And you might recall, on November 21st, we decided not to award the request for proposals on the Fifth Street redevelopment. And part of that decision was committing to coming back by February 21, which is today, with options for where we go from here. And so with us, Dan and David have been working hard since November on developing these options and visiting with stakeholders to arrive at a place where we could present those to you today. We are expecting to have a decision one way or the other, either to go forward with one of the options or to be specific on more information that's needed, and come back at the next meeting if we're not ready to make a decision today. So either one is good with us. With that, I'll turn it over to you, Dan. David.
Thank you. Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services. David Lodge, Project Management Manager.
Okay, so Kirk really queued it up, but I want to remind everybody what brought us here today. So in November, we presented the options that it came through the RFP process. That was a process that we, the PUD worked through with the port and the city of Wenatchee and with key stakeholders of the Wenatchee Downtown Association and the chamber. At that time, the board moved to direct staff to end the RFP process without selection, but to come back in 3 months. And 3 months sounded like a long time 3 months ago. It felt like that was just yesterday we were here talking about this. It's gone by very quickly, but we have been productive. We had some really good discussions during that time. So what we'll do in this presentation is take you through the options and how we develop those options, and then with a staff recommendation, and then we'll give time for questions and then public comment. So one of the things we have to do with any project is really understand the project goal. Sometimes we have multiple goals. This one, we termed it as a goal that had different parameters that we were balancing. So these four parameters that we tried to balance as we were going through these options was to be consistent with the community vision. And so we talked about that process we went through, started in 2018, culminated in 2019 with a report out to the commission. And I think it was adopted actually March of 2020, right at the beginning of the pandemic. But that became our vision for the project. So we want to be consistent with that. We want to promote timely redevelopment. And the timely redevelopment really has to do with a request from the downtown community not to put a fence around this property and let it sit over time. Let's get something going. We talked about early wins. Unfortunately, with the way that we have to move out of the site, it's not like we could free up part of the site for early development, but we would want to see something happening relatively quickly after the PUD departs. So timely development was very important. And as always, we want to talk about the value that it provides to our customer owners. And so that is a monetary value plus what is the value to the community. So the value comes in very varied ways. And then it takes into account the resources that the PUD has to provide to the options. So this is one that really became more apparent as the options began expanding. And some of those options had a very large investment of staff time and resources to act on. So we tried to bring that in, and you'll hear the pros and cons of the options and where that results in a higher demand for staff time and public or investment in the project. So since the activities on November 21st, we met with the appraiser to update our appraisal, did that back in December, and we'll be getting the appraisal back in the next couple weeks. We met with the YMCA, and this was part of the direction from the commission was to talk to the key stakeholders. The YMCA has been a stakeholder throughout the process, and we're looking at what kind of deal points we'd be contemplating on any kind of sale of property. And those were very fruitful because part of understanding the YMCA's desire to be here was understanding their timeline and their funding options. And so they took us through all the different funding mechanisms they were looking at. They took us through their current fundraising campaign, the public campaign, and they kind of helped us understand why this site is so important to them. And they're very committed to the site. They said it was their number one option, and they really wanted to see this through. So we had good conversations with YMCA. We also met with the Music Theater of Wenatchee, and really to understand their concerns about how the development would impact their operation. They already exist adjoining our property and utilize our property. And have for over 20 years for their use for parking. So we wanted to understand how that potential of use of the parking and what arrangements could be made. So we got some good feedback from Music Theater on what would work for them. And then finally, once we got a few of these kind of hashed out, we met with our stakeholder group again. So we had the city and the port and the Wenatchee Downtown Association and the chamber came in and went through these and gave us kind of the hard reality on some of them. Some of them probably wouldn't be the best. And so we end up refining and actually expanding the list of options you see today was in great part due to the input from the port and the city helping us understand the processes they've been through and how the success of those have really driven the way they approach some of these things. Not our core competency, site redevelopment. So hearing from those at public agencies that have done so really helped us refine these and gave us some good options. And so that's why we ended up with five. We were floating four for a period of time. We ended up with five as kind of a breaking one of the options into a couple different options. So that was a very fruitful part of this process.
So So we've come up with five different options for how to move forward with property, and we're going to do a deep dive on each one of them. But for an overview, we could postpone action. We could list the property for sale with the real estate agent. We could market the property with a broker. We could develop an anchor use, or we could do a full-scale development. So as we talk about each one, option one would be to postpone action. There could be an argument made that market conditions aren't great, so we could wait for more favorable market conditions, and in the meantime, explore tenant options or possibly look at doing some remediation activities on site.
So the pros and cons of this, and this is probably for us the easiest way to approach these options, are really to list out the pros and cons. And we've tried to anchor those back against those project goal parameters. So this does allow time for the PUD to time our development with the market. So there's probably a better chance of getting a higher return. And it also allows time to do some of the site remediation. So we know we have a fuel station that has tanks that need to be remediated. We've done environmental assessments on the site, and there's a couple minor other cleanups to do. We've heard from developers that some buildings are problematic to redevelopment, so maybe we take that opportunity to demolish a building or two and kind of prep the site to be ready when the economy changes. And it also potentially provides some interim uses. We've heard about downtown parking needs. So we could do a green space. We'd have something down here that was an interim use. It wouldn't just sit with a fence around it. But the cons on that are that it really does delay the redevelopment, which is the ultimate goal, is to redevelop the site. So postponing doesn't really start us on that path very, very quickly. And so the potential for a long delay between beneficial use of the site could occur if we were just to postpone action, because who's to say when the market's going to recover and to what degree does recovery have to happen before we could start working. And then the big one on this is it's inconsistent with what the vision of the site was, is to get something going. We did talk about those early wins, and hopefully see some activity on the site. And for downtown, a vacant site is not appealing. It hurts all of downtown to have vacancy. So we felt this one, really the cons outweighed the pros in terms of when we assess this option compared to the others.
Option two would be listing the property for sale. So this would be listing without any kind of restriction and allowing the market to drive the redevelopment outcomes.
So this is one that it speaks to the, it could be a, it's a nice for staff commitment. It's put a sign up and we would evaluate, and our real estate department really would take care of the purchase and sale agreements and negotiations. It doesn't commit to any site improvements. However, I'm guessing that proposals would come with understanding of the PUD needs to remediate certain things before a developer would take on any of the site. It does delay that redevelopment, because we could get somebody who wants to purchase it and does not want to take action until the economy improves on their own. We've seen other properties in Wenatchee change hands and then sit for a number of years before they time their development with whatever market they're trying to hit. So we would lose the ability to really do that. We don't have control over the outcome itself, the uses, although there is, I think as Councilmember Allen did bring up in the last meeting, that there are zoning restrictions that would keep, really incompatible uses from happening. I think that the vision of the site is more specific than just what the zoning would allow. So there'd be some protection of downtown, but not really the ultimate protection that we were looking at through the visioning process. Again, it's kind of inconsistent with the community vision, and there's a potential that we would see a negative land value if the desire to tear down buildings and desire to remediate actions on the site, like the fuel station, those kind of things, could result in a negative or a zero land value just based on all the offsetting costs that a developer would incur to develop the site. So we could see we'll buy it for this amount if you invest this in readying the site for development. So we could kind of be back at a bit of a square one with those kind of offers. So that's kind of where we were landing. And again, this had quite a bit of more negativity around the outcome when we were assessing this option.
Option three would be marketing the property with a broker. And this is where we start to get more involved in guiding the outcome. So we'd hire a real estate broker and market the property to developers and then evaluate proposals as they come in and have control over the sales. This does create opportunities for a master developer to take on the whole project or the possibility of multiple developers taking on specific parcels. And it does anticipate that there would be some financial investment from the district depending on the interest.
So this is where you start to see the ability to maybe balance a little better on those core parameters. So we do have some control and that commitment to downtown to make sure that the outcome, the uses on the property are consistent with that vision. I think this does provide the higher level of control for that. There is less resource, PUD staff resource commitment than the subsequent options we're going to bring up, but it still has a significant amount of time to evaluate these proposals, negotiate, and see what investment the PUD has to make, and those could precipitate projects that become projects that we have to then execute over time. But we do have a potential here to kind of realize the market value, because we would be negotiating with those that are interested, and we could negotiate some of these options. And I think the idea, and this really came from a discussion with the city about how they're marketing their North Wenatchee DOT property. They're using a similar model in order to open up as many options as possible, but then they're controlling the outcome of those. They are talking to the potential purchasers and actually having them take on some of the public investment on the site. So if you're going to buy this parcel, you're going to build this part of the road that goes along that parcel. So there's some ability to kind of negotiate those impacts to the district. There is a potential that we could not hear a lot in this current market, although what we hear from our consultant that we use to develop the vision plan, they said a lot of developers are trying to think ahead for when the market gets better, and they're tying up properties, but not necessarily tying them up to act on right away, but as the economy improves. So we may get some interest, but it may be to do some work in 2024, 2025. So that we may lose some of the control on the timing of the outcome.
Option four goes a step further and develops an anchor use for the site to accelerate the timeline. So this is a two-phase approach, and the first phase we would propose to negotiate a purchase and sale agreement with the YMCA and Music Theater of Wenatchee to establish those anchor uses for the site. And this does anticipate that there would need to be an investment in site improvements, such as demolition, circulation, utilities, in order to enable final development. Then in phase two, we would use a broker, like we described in option three, for the remaining parcels after mitigating unknowns and risks on the property. So in doing second phase, we might find a master developer to take on the entire project, or again, create opportunities for multiple developers.
As this one, if you've noticed, is broken into two slides, because there's a lot to consider on this being a two-phased approach. And we think a lot of the pros from this come in having that first phase that addresses some of the property right away. And so it is consistent with the community vision. One of the options that was developed in the community visioning process was the ability to do a mixed use development that had some nonprofit use, some for-profit, some retail, some different things, because that energy that occurs on a site like this, a 7-acre development, doesn't occur if you're very myopic in your uses. If you just do one thing, it's really hard to create around the clock, and 7-day-a-week activity. So this would kind of address the nonprofit public side, and then would arrange or enable the rest of the property to develop in more of a market rate, market scheme. So we would have that balance of uses. It does allow the project to start very quickly after PUD moves off in the beginning of next year when we're finally off the site. So you have those negotiated, and we can negotiate timelines, and that if certain things don't happen, the property reverts back, or certain things have to happen in a certain amount of time. And this is really important, is it establishes that anchor use. So one of the things we did learn from talking to the developers was the control of the theme of the site, what's going to anchor the site, and what's going to provide the framework in which others will want to invest. And so the YMCA comes with a whole plethora of things that you do around the why. You'd have a place for, you know, people come to the Y to do an activity and have a little restaurant next door, or have a little, you know, just other things that you say, okay, now that we have a theme for the site, this kind of kicks off other uses around the site. So it does that for us. Some other things that we consider that really aren't part of the core parameters, but that really are important, is this endorses a project that's already got community support. So we've heard from the Y, we've heard from the public that the Y is very successful in their fundraising to date, and I think that it's nice to get onto a project that has that synergy already, because then just having that ability to capitalize that this thing will probably see to the end, because there is that energy, and it also, with taking a few acres of the 7.5 off the table, it may right size the remaining amount of property for a local developer. It's one of the things we heard through the RFP process, was this might have been too big for some local developers to take on. Well, if there's 3 acres left, that becomes more palatable. And so I think the chance of getting a local developer that could take on the remainder, it increases with this. And this also mitigates some of the risks that we heard from the developers through the process. They definitely were concerned about remediation of site issues, working on road improvements and circulation within the site, and we would address those as we went through this process rather than just putting that on to a developer. But it doesn't come without a cost. So the cost on this is really it's time. Staff time is pretty significant, and the financial investment on the property could be significant. We don't know exactly what that would be at this point, but it kind of depends on where we get in the process. But that's all basically coming back to the commission as those agreements start to develop. But there could be a significant investment. We don't know the level of financial return to our customer owner at this point, because we don't know what the remainder of the property would sell for. We'll know a little more after we get the appraisals back and what our expectations should be. But it could net out a little less than some of the other options. And it does rely on this nonprofit successfully completing their fundraising efforts. So there's a little bit of risk in how that goes through. And I'm sure we'll hear from the Y on their view of that risk. So
our final option, option 5, is to perform a full development. So forming a partnership with the port and the city to take on the full project as the developer, with possibility of maintaining ownership at the end or selling upon completion.
This is one that has us very nervous. It would be a significant amount of staff time, and it puts the PUD into an arena that we don't spend much time in. We'd really have to rely heavily on our other partners, especially the port that does this kind of redevelopment. But as the owner, we could go through this process. We have, you know, the authority to improve the properties, to help return a final outcome on the property. But it doesn't really, it's not something we do every day. So we generally sell our property as in a surplus process. We sell it to an interested landowner, and it's really an arm's length type thing. It's not maintaining a role in the property for the long term. And this contemplates us kind of over time developing the property out and selling it off in pieces, or even retaining some ownership. Which I think we've heard from some of the community, they like to see the PUD retain some ownership downtown. But it really does have a huge impact on staff and a potential huge impact on the financial investment that would be necessary to realize this development. So with those, we did analyze, you know, all those options, and the recommendation that we'd like to present today is to really get the endorsement of option 4 and to start with phase 1 of option 4. And we would kind of further evaluate phase 2, which we'd probably talk to some brokers and see how we would structure phase 2 should we go that direction. But really to continue the discussion and kind of accelerate the discussion with the YMCA Music Theater, and then bring those options back to the board for action later in, I think we said, second quarter of 23. Taking some time to work with those stakeholders to develop those contracts.
Commissioners, thank you for the presentation. Do we have any questions for staff before we open this up to public comment?
Question?
Yes.
Option 2.
You mentioned there's appraisals out.
Yes.
When do we expect to have some information or returns on the appraisals of the property?
Next week. Okay. Toward the middle of next week.
All right. Okay. That's my question.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question.
You bet.
So, Dan, on the appraisals, depending upon the dollar amount that they come back at, will that have any potential to change staff's recommendation?
It could. It also kind of takes in, it may take, we may need to take into account the parcel that YMCA is wishing to acquire. We've had discussions on several parcels. Those will come in with varying values based on frontage versus the back part of the site. So that may change the discussion with the YMCA also. But I don't know that. I think it'll be really more the narrative and not the value, because they do a lot of market analysis in these appraisals, these commercial appraisals, that let us understand what the market's doing. And so there may be some of the narrative of what's happening in the market that may change something. But I don't anticipate. I think I've had conversations with our appraisal and our appraiser, so I do understand where they're coming from. But I don't think the values in and of itself would change a lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Got one other question. That spurred something in me. Talking about the appraisals, you also mentioned the fact that, you know, we may incur costs by tank removal and some of the land prep if we did that, and that would diminish the return on that on the return. Now, is that just cost base you're looking at, or are you looking at the improvements in the value of the property after those improvements are made? Are we going to get an appraisal or price on that as well?
Yeah, I asked the appraiser to do some what we call hypotheticals. So what if we took down a building? What if we remediated? So we should get some of that and understand what the net return is. So if we spent X dollars tearing down a building, what does that do to the land value? So we would have those.
Okay. Yep. Yeah, thank you.
Any other questions? If not, I'd like to open this up to public comment. I anticipate there will be some desire. Don't be bashful. If you could give us your, at the mic, give us your name and address for the record. And
thank you. Tori Foster, Chief Executive Officer of the Wenatchee Valley YMCA. Thank you for allowing me to make the comment now, timely, while you're trying to make your decision. Clearly, we would love for you to take staff into consideration and endorse option 4. We believe the YMCA is the ideal anchor tenant, and many YMCAs across the country have proven that. We'd love to prove that here. The attraction and the mixed-use development for the property would be extraordinary, as you can imagine. There's strong community support for the new YMCA in endorsing this, and you would be aligning yourself with many community leaders and the community vision as well. Having new YMCA anchor the new campus would create a lasting legacy in our community for support, benefit, and economic development. Second, although we have some critical timeline and financial constraints, which have previously been communicated to the PUD staff, we are confident that the YMCA and the PUD can come to terms with property alignment for key development terms for meeting our timeline and financial needs. Third, we have been very successful to date in our fundraising. Despite the fact we don't have a site, we don't have renderings, we don't have professional fundraising services. Thank you, Rufus. We are at $8 million, nearly $8 million towards our $22 million goal, but we are at 53% of our private fundraising goal, and we have not gone public yet. 3.5% of that funding is conditioned upon being at this site. So clearly there is a love and a need and an envision to see our YMCA here. $3.5 million. State and federal funding opportunities are substantial, but there are critical timelines to apply for those. We have just learned exciting news last week that we have an opportunity for a $4 million federal funding source through Senator Murray's office. And this would be a huge boost to our efforts, obviously, to take advantage of this opportunity. We are facing a deadline by next Monday. A decision by the PUD Commission to move forward on the sale of this property today would clear the way for us to apply for that position next Monday. This public sector funding grant opportunities are crucial to this success, and the timeline are critical as well. And finally, we have a highly regarded architect and general contract team selected and ready to go to hit the ground running next week as quickly as possible, just to confirm where the site is. That's all we need. We hope you authorize the staff today to move forward on option four, clearly to move forward with deliberate and purposeful speed to reach a development agreement with the YMCA that meets both parties' goals and civic needs. So, any questions?
Commissioners, any questions?
So I just want to make sure I heard you signify that your desire is as an anchor tenant.
Yes, we would love to be the anchor tenant.
I'm curious, and this is based on an experience I had yesterday about what might be in the WISE vision a compatible use for in the other area for an anchor tenant. And I say this not jokingly, but my son and I went to South Woodinville yesterday to the wine village that is down there. And what a marvelous experience we had. You know, but with Y being focused on youth, would an activity of that nature not be good, or would it, you know?
Yeah. So our, you know, clearly birth to grave. So we run the gamut. So anything that would be attractive to our target audience, our families, right? So we imagine, and we know of other YMCAs that have created a YMCA, dropped it in the middle of a 20-acre plot, and all around them is residential and coffee shops and breweries and
okay.
places where people live and co-create and create communities together. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Super. Question?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You mentioned this funding that you have to apply for next week. Mm-hmm. So I assume if the decision here is not to move forward today, then you lose that, or is there other opportunities for funding down the road?
We would lose that opportunity.
With no other options down the road?
There are opportunities on a state level for $5.5 million, and that would be we need site control for that, and that opens up in June 2024.
My question then, if we did decide to move, I guess this is to staff, not your decision, but if we voted to move forward with the Y as an anchor position, how does that lock the PUD in further negotiations when it comes to, as we learn what the value of the property is and those kinds of things? There may be decisions where we would want the Y to contribute some money to this, or I mean, there's all kinds of options out there. What's going to happen? So, I guess what I'm looking at is what are our options after we vote on this stuff, and how detailed can that discussion be moving forward?
Mm-hmm. I might take that.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the option that's recommended is to proceed with negotiating. With the Y and the music theater, and of course that'll Dan talked about the appraisal that's coming back, and so there'll be this is what we think the property is worth, this is how much, and we'll see if we can reach a negotiation. So that all this does, that decision with that recommendation at this point, is to allow staff to proceed with negotiating with two anchor tenants.
So the PUD does have the option of an off ramp down the
purchase
road.
Purchase and sale would come back to the board for approval.
So is that the only thing we're going to be deciding on?
Well, I'm sure that's one of many things.
Okay.
I'm trying to be specific. No, I appreciate that. Relevant to the question of if you move forward today authorizing staff to begin those negotiations, I think that's what staff will do. They will start those negotiations with the Y, and I think the music theater was also proposed. If we're able to reach a meeting of the minds with either or both of those counterparties, we would bring that proposed purchase and sale agreement back to the board, run through the terms, pricing, all of those things, and then the board would either approve or not.
So follow-up question then. We do move forward with it. You're talking about a huge funding source in a week. Is that, would that be locked in, or how does that affect your position down the road if we decide to make different changes along the way?
I can answer that.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's the federal funding is a construction shortfall. So it's not for a new Y, it's construction shortfall. So regardless of what, there's a, we have right now in our funding model a construction shortfall to complete. All I need for Monday's submittal of the application is a letter of support from the PUD. Everything else, their site control is not needed. I'm sure once you sign the contract, things have to be in place. But as of right now, to apply, I don't need that. I just need a letter of support saying that we're moving forward in negotiations.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That clarifies things. Thank mm-hmm. you.
Any other questions?
You might have one here. Just Gary?
And I'm not sure that this is a question for Dory, but it is a question perhaps aimed at Eric. Eric, are the two purchase and sale agreements treated as separate? So in other words, if one or the other are unable to raise funding, it will still move forward?
So yes, Commissioner, there are a lot of alternative paths forward. The cleanest path forward that I see at this point would be two separate purchase and sale agreement proposed, one each with the potential counterparties. So they would not be codependent unless the board or the parties made them so. We would bring each of them back separately to the board for consideration and action. And then I'm certain as it relates to some of the particulars with financing and some of the conditions, we would work with the counterparty representatives to make sure that both sides were protected with appropriate conditions to closing, contingencies, those kinds of things. So if the grand design did not look like it was coming to fruition, likely both parties would want to walk. So, hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Eric. It does. Thanks.
Any other questions for Dory? Thank you, Dory.
Thank you.
Is there additional public input?
Vicki Michael, 2345 Enchantments View, East Wenatchee.
John Mauser, 17925 River Road in Leavenworth.
First of all, I'd like to thank the PUD for being such good stewards and neighbors to us. The snow thing, if we had a show that night. And I couldn't believe how great the crew came out and made it possible, because we could not get in touch with, you know, all the patrons that had tickets, and it was great. It was great. It worked so smooth. I couldn't believe it. So thank you very much for that. We're still here. We're still interested in the purchase and option four.
Do you mind just stating, I'm assuming you're with the music theater?
Oh, I am.
Yes. Sorry.
Sorry about that. Music Theater of Wenatchee.
Yes. Me too.
Yes. Sorry. We're very interested in purchase agreement. You know, we have since 2018. We've been sitting, you know, waiting for the go on that. And that's, you know, that's our stumbling. That's where we stopped, you know, because because the building that we would like to purchase is obviously the Fish and Wildlife Building, which is attached to ours for future growth, more rehearsal space, because then we can do more shows, all kinds of things we could do with that space. And it's right there. You know, that's the beauty of that. We do draw in a lot of people into downtown for dinners, bars, whatever. We do five shows plus the huge Apple Blossom show every year. It might not be at our facility because it's gotten way big. It is now at the PAC and has been for the last few years. Draws in. They have 500 and over 500 seats. I think it's 536 or something. So, and we do 10 shows there. So that's a lot of impact downtown. Not, you know, are those shows are $100,000 shows to us. You know, we put out the $100,000, put in the show for the community. So it's I see where the draw is. You know, downtown wants business, you know, of course, income. And I do believe we provide some of that.
I'd also like to start with a thank you, and the thank you is to Dan and David. They have been working with us, meeting with us for 4.5 years, whatever it was. They have just devoted so much time to us. I'm sure there is not another group that has gotten the sort of attention we have. They've been just great coming to us, meeting with our board, and we appreciate all the time that they've spent over those 4.5 years. Probably more than we deserve. That was great. And just to restate, our focus from the very beginning was top priority parking, second priority, can we get all or part of that building next door to us for a price that we can afford? And that has been where we've been for 4.5 years. And the 4.5 years have had some ups, and they've had some downs, and some worries, and some encouraging, and so forth. And this is the most encouraging thing that's happened in 4.5 years. The idea that you guys would adopt option number 4 gives us just what we need. It gives us parking, not the pie-in-the-sky parking, maybe, but it gives us parking. If the numbers come out right, it gives us the opportunity to purchase part of the building next door to us. It would just be fantastic for our organization. And as Vicky said, I think we do contribute a lot. I mean, it's going to be strengthening that part of your former campus when we kind of take over that space and it gets improved and so forth. It's something that's not going to look like a chain link fence around it, look like a vibrant part of the campus. So we are obviously very hopeful that you will approve option number 4.
Can you speak to your fundraising efforts or how you intend to purchase the property?
I don't think that's well defined. We have ideas. The board has not, you know, we're trying not to get ahead of ourselves, you know. So we haven't said, well, you know, if this out, let's fundraise this way or fundraise that way. There are a lot of options on the table. I don't know if we want to talk about.
Yeah, we have a private investor that's willing to give us, you know, a big chunk of the money we would need to purchase the building. And then we haven't even started our fundraising. Our followers, patrons, or whatever, are really good at that. So we didn't want to burn them out 4 years of, you know. So we're waiting to see if we can, if we have a chance to get the building, we'll go in high gear to get all the funding we need.
Question?
Yes.
Okay. I haven't had the privilege of being part of this process from the beginning. I picked up bits and pieces, and I know that you've been involved in all of those discussions. The question I'm having then, and when you present, is first of all, you say you do 10 shows at the PAC, and you, because it's bigger than what you are there, and so my question is that really a good call to do it in your current location, and wouldn't that not be better in the PAC?
Oh, no. I must not have made myself clear. They would stay at the PAC. We're in partnership with the PAC to have all of our Apple Blossom shows there.
Yeah, but you say there's 10 shows. I don't know how many shows you put on a year.
The 10 shows, it's 10 shows for the one Apple Blossom.
Oh, okay.
10 separate shows in that series. Yeah. Okay. Like you could go see our show 10 times.
Okay, I thought it might be 10 different shows that you're doing the year.
No,
and so
no.
Would
that's,
that be
that's
better
pretty much the
either?
Only big okay. show we do okay. is the Apple Blossom at the PAC. It's okay. gotten impossible to do it at 146 seats. Yeah.
Thank you. That clarifies that for me. Okay. And then the other question I have is you're raising money to buy portions of another building to expand the current. Have you considered purchasing the parking area? Yeah, rather than just having it gifted in this deal.
Well, it's
Commissioner, maybe I could interject. So
I don't know if that question's been asked before. I'm just asking.
I just want to make a clarification so that the district can't gift the property to actually either entity. Public money can't be gifted even to nonprofits who are serving communities.
Right.
So that's just one of the restrictions that we have. So we would need to negotiate, I'm going to say, the scope of what that agreement would look like, whether that was something limited to parking or something that.
So we need sort of a filtering system of some sort.
So we would.
Is
we
that
would,
where we're going with this?
Well, I would get to say that there's probably a large range of what we could deliver or in terms of exchange for consideration, sell, whether that's parking or the building or something in between. I don't actually haven't been involved in the vision, so I don't know that. But, yeah, we would certainly negotiate whatever the right consideration is for that. And
so no gifting allowed?
No gifting allowed.
Okay. Unfortunately.
But has it been discussed about purchasing it?
Yes. Okay. I think actually that there's been expressions of interest in purchasing as described for since the beginning of the conversation.
Okay. That's it. Thank you so much. Mm-hmm. That clarifies that too. Thank you.
Okay.
Anyone else?
Any other questions? Gary? Okay.
You tell them we're all staring at him on screen.
Okay.
Now.
Oh, he's up there. I'm looking at him here. So. Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you both for
thank
coming.
Thank you both.
Is there any other public testimony?
Jim Kuhn, staff member of the Chelan-Douglas Regional Port Authority, 1 Campbell Way Parkway. So thank you for the opportunity to speak, and want to thank staff for all the options that are on the table here. I think when the port originally got involved with this and we looked at a lot of the options, the issue has remained all of the uncertainty and unknown, right, the risks that the private sector doesn't want to take. So I think anything the PUD can do to reduce risks, reduce uncertainty at this site is going to improve the chances of us having success at the end of the day where the public drives by this and sees the outstanding redevelopment. So I think, you know, the developer option 4, I think, has some merit. I just want to make sure to get on record that just to have 2 nonprofits here is not a successful project. That really the PUD needs to make a significant investment, and that means Electric Avenue needs to be built out. You got buildings that need to be demolished. So there's a lot more than just saying, you know, 2 nonprofits coming down here. So it's going to take some investments, and just want to make sure the board understands that. I think done right, then it improves the chances of getting the remainder property developed, hopefully in the private sector hands, where it can go back to the taxpayers back on the tax rolls, which I think is a goal of the PUD as well. So I think you're heading in the right direction, but I just want to remind the board there's other investments that need to be made. And, you know, I see the anchor tenant is a good option, and I think once the Electric Avenue is put in and all the other risks are taken out of it, I think bringing a broker in for the last component of it makes some sense. They'll have a understanding of the market. And so I see kind of a combination of option 4. And then once the nonprofits are in, you make all of your site investments, which, again, reduce the risks, reduce the uncertainty for private sector. Then I think you could bring a broker in, and I think the rest of the parcels should go.
Jim, do you feel by doing that, we, you know, as I reflect back onto the discussions on development, that it appears to me that by doing this, along with the advice and support from the port, working with a broker, we then probably, this is my question, would it be accurate to say we then provide a better opening up for local developers to be able to go in for a piece of that and develop it appropriately, whereas the big project and, you know, biting the whole elephant off might have been too much for some. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think that's a good description. And I think once you're done with your investment, there are some smaller parcels that I think some local private developers could take on and do a really responsible job. I think at the end of the day, the question is, what's the ROI, the return on investment, right? I'll tell you, sitting in the regional port's position, the ROI is not always measured by you making a financial gain on the property.
Right.
The return on investment may be, Commissioner, you driving by in 5 years and saying, this was an incredible redevelopment. PUD makes some money on it, probably not a lot. Maybe you invested more, but the end of the day was the community is proud of the development and proud of what happened. And so it might not be the financial return that you would like to see. But if you're going to measure it on the community endorsing the project and what got redeveloped, then that's another way of legitimately looking at that was a positive return on investment.
I got a question.
Sure.
Jim, you did mention the fact that, you know, there needs to be road improvements along there. I guess it's Electric Avenue, right?
I think that's what we call it. I'm naming it Electric Avenue. Okay. I don't know what it's called.
All right. Well, it sounds good to me. But, you know, it, to me, when I look at this project, you know, and you're familiar with these kinds of things, is the city involved in any of this as far as improvements? And, you know, like when I think of roads, I think, well, it's a city street, and the city probably should be somehow involved in improving that as well. I mean, we have property to sell. I don't think it should always just fall on one entity to do the development. Maybe it's going to benefit the city through tax dollars and those kinds of things. So where is the city when it comes to this?
Yeah, I don't represent the city.
I know you don't, but you work with entities. And I'm just, you know, I'm throwing that out. Maybe there's somebody in the room that can answer that question, but you brought up the topic. So I'm okay. But thanks, Jim. I appreciate everything you've contributed. Thank you.
Commissioner Bergen, we've been working with the city on what's called a tax increment financing district. And so there's two different things here. One, I think Jim was referring to, was an internal circulation road. Would not be
inside the...
That'd be internal. But okay. We are working with the city to improve Wenatchee Avenue and Fifth Street. And they're working through a tax increment financing, which exactly what you said, leverages the dollars that the site then returns to the city for them to bond and do improvements. So, yeah, we are working through that.
Okay. I'm sorry. I wasn't even thinking the internal road. Thanks. All right.
And, Jim, thank you for your insight. I know the port has put a lot of time into this project as well. I think what Option 4 does, it's not that we're not realizing that there's additional work to be done, but more than anything, if we choose to go that way, it allows our staff to have direction and to begin moving forward. It also allows the YMCA to meet some financial deadlines. And so back to phase one versus phase two. Thank you very much for your information.
Jim, also want to, before you run off, I just, you know, I don't know in all these what the role of the port will be down the road, but you've been a great partner, and I want to express that appreciation as we've gone through this process and kind of turned the corner, went a different direction, but I would, you know, I'm going to be counting on advice and support from the port because you've been a great, you know, even though there, you know, may go out for a broker, what all the details are, maybe. I just want you to know I appreciate the port's efforts and support and guidance for us, and I value that, and I will continue to seek that out.
Thank you. We all want the same thing. We want a spectacular redevelopment on a Fifth Street campus. So I think we'll get there. We're doing bite-sized pieces, and I think your new direction's a good one.
Great. Thank you very much.
And we all serve the same people.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jim.
Is there any other public input?
Good morning. My name's Chris Carlson, 100 Pioneer Avenue, Cashmere. I'm actually a city council member, but I come today just as a community member. I'm also an architect. I've been an architect for 30-some years, both in Seattle and 25 years over here. And I appreciate everybody's time. It's a long-going effort. And Dan and I have had conversations about this as well. I think it's important. I think you're doing the right thing, because this is something you get one chance at and to do it right. So I think it's important that it's a thoughtful process to go through, and I know there's pressure to get off the dime, get it done quickly. But I think more importantly, you know, 20 years from now, when you're looking at that development, whether it took an extra 6 months or a year even, isn't really going to matter if you've got it done right. I think option 4 and option 5 were both interesting. I think having experience doing developments, I did a bunch of Nordstrom stores early on in my career, and they'd be an anchor tenant, they'd have another anchor tenant, and then they'd fill in between. Having a couple of anchor tenants is going to require a lot of communication and work between those anchor tenants and all the other patchwork of developments that take place through there. So that's going to present some problematic strategizing, I think, to get that done. I tend to like option 5 because I don't think it precludes you from anything in option 4. You could still do the anchor tenants. You could still do the patchwork fill-in of other smaller developments, other smaller developers. But it gives that control to the PUD and Chelan, the Douglas Regional Port Authority. If you know Jim and Stacy and his staff are willing to take that on, because they'll go out, I'm pretty sure, and hire a consultant team to get that job done. But it gets you off the dime. It allows for financing to take place immediately. It allows that regional control and local community control. It doesn't give anything up that I can see for some of the benefits of option 4. The Music Theater of Wenatchee and the YMCA can still proceed forward. It requires more staff time, things like that. But I think it kind of gives you the best of both worlds. So that's kind of my take on it. I want to see something really spectacular done. You know, I think the city and the PUD and the port and everyone has a chance to get something really spectacular done here. And I'd like to see the best thing possible for the Wenatchee Valley and the community.
That's it.
Thank you.
Commissioners, Eric, maybe I just add that, so I think the only substantive difference, so first of all, I actually agree with Mr. Carlson said in terms of option 5 giving the same level of flexibility as option 4. We can change back and forth, I think. I think that the nuanced guidance that staff is seeking really is relevant to the go forward and negotiate with the port. With the YMCA and the Music Theater. But appreciate those comments because I see that same flexibility between those two.
Commissioners, I'm Linda Haglin. I represent the Wenatchee Downtown Association at 103 Palouse for about 6 more days. I think this is called going out strong, maybe. I just want to say thank you. Right from day one, when I came before this commission, we were worried that this would happen to us without us as a downtown. And I represent a bunch of passionate people who love downtown and invest their life in downtown and their businesses. That's always been my heart in being at the table. And you've allowed us to be at the table with no money in the game, right? The port, the city, and the PUD funded the Collins-Warman study that gave you a pretty clear look at what the community wanted. And you've allowed us to be at the table the entire time. You also indulged a little meeting when my board key leaders could come and talk and just talk about our concerns through this. Always what we didn't want to happen was blight on the entrance to our downtown, and always saw this as an opportunity for a legacy for the PUD where you're leaving, as well as where you're going, and then an opportunity for a more welcoming entrance into downtown. It's always what we've wanted. And we've always been encouraged and sometimes disencouraged as we've taken 2 steps forward and sometimes 4 steps back. But you've always entertained our opinions, and I want to say thank you for that. I can speak still for an organization that wants anything but one, two, or three, right? For one, two, and three, one, I about had to call 911 when I saw that up on the screen. And I think Dan just did it just so I'd have a heart attack in the back row. But something happening in that as soon as humanly possible will give a visual to this community that you do care and we all care what happens on this. I love you using this 8 acres, 5 buildings, and 170,000 square feet. It's a lot of property on the entrance to my downtown. So I support something happening, anything but one, two, or three. Thank you very much. And thank you again personally for allowing my voice to be heard. It wasn't always fun, but the staff, Dan and David, have been very patient and very gracious to listen to our opinion.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Any questions for Linda? We're going to miss you.
I'm not going anywhere.
I would like to just extend a thank you to Linda. Thank you for all of your hard work and for being such a strong supporter of the downtown area. Thank you, Linda. You're going to be missed.
Okay. Well, as she said, Gary, she's not going anywhere. So, any other public input? Seeing nobody arising, staff is making a recommendation that we imagine there's a motion that could be put up right there.
And
that's the third one.
That's a recommendation.
What is the desire of the commission?
Well, just point of clarification, do we make motion and then discuss?
Yes. That's. Is there a motion to approve, to recommend option four moving forward?
I so move that we move with staff recommendation of option four.
And present back to the commission by what? Is there a desire? How much time do you really need?
Well, so we probably need 6 to 8 weeks to get the appraisals in, do some negotiations and come back. Now, we probably would have some interim check-ins. So,
yeah, I guess I'm wondering, unless the board wants a deadline out there, we would just be back as there's something to report, yeah. And hopefully
there's probably enough people that will be holding your feet to the fire,
yeah,
in the community.
Well, I think with the last motion, we did want to have something out there. And I think in our recommendation, we said Q2. So, no, not later than the second meeting in June, I guess, would be if you want to have a good, you know, not to exceed timeline.
So the motion has been started on the floor.
So to direct staff to proceed with option number four as presented and report back to the commission by the second meeting in June.
That works. Okay. Is there a second to that motion?
I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded. So now it's time for discussion. Discussion on the motion.
I have a few comments I'd like to just share. But as it pertains to the motion, I don't know how this fits in, but I would also like to continue studying and working with the city and the port as part of that process.
Can you, Commissioner McKenna, can you put the mic right there?
So as long as that's understood that we value their input and we want to keep working with them, I don't think that necessarily needs to change in the motion. I can just clarify. So we did say to work on phase two of option four as part of the recommendation. And so I think that's exactly what you're contemplating there is work with the port, work with the city on all these other things that would have to take place as part of option two or phase two of option four. So then my comments are, kind of right along the line with Dory, option one, two, or three are not, I'm not interested in them. as they don't provide that consistent direction that the community has given us. When you came in with the initial, this is what's, you know, what the downtown needs, and, you know, that's really stuck with me, the importance of not abandoning the community down here and really doing something very special. And I think when we started seeing the proposals come in, I think there was a level of excitement of possibilities. And interestingly enough, and I'm just going to kind of talk for a minute here, if you don't mind. I've kind of grappled with this idea of when you sell something, you need to get the best value. And, you know, Jim, I think your comments, if he's still here, he's gone, were so important. ROI, the return on investment, is not just cash, but really the meshing with what we're doing with our mission. It's the quality of life that we're trying to accomplish for the citizens in Chelan County, not just the downtown people, but the entire, this, how does this benefit our entire county? And so I think we're why I'm supportive of this is because, one, I think it does enhance the quality of life in Chelan County. It really does leave a legacy of us, of the PUD, as we move out, benefiting the downtown and the citizens of Chelan County. I think this provides the opportunity to get a couple of anchors to the property, which then I believe will allow for smaller developers to come in, as we've seen in the initial proposals, to do something locally and spectacular as well. So I'm excited about the opportunity and I'm supportive of that option.
Okay. We have a motion on the floor, open for discussion.
Comment?
Yes.
I'm in favor of option four, but I have some reservations about this as well, because as has been brought up in the discussion, that the PUD is not able to gift. And so I'm concerned about how we go about these projects and how we look at other communities as well. And maybe this is a bigger issue that we need to address, because as we move forward, there's always issues in every community. And so is the PUD really set up in our vision, mission, and all of our statements and our policies moving forward in order to move forward with this project? Because there will be value. I agree with Commissioner here that it can be measured in a lot of ways, and I think that's important. And in doing so, we have to consider the value to the city and what it actually returns in monetary value from something like this, and what the contribution is from the city that is going to be a direct benefit in revenue, not necessarily to other communities. We'll get the advantage of the facility as a population, but the revenue will be captured by the city from any increased commercial activity. So I think that needs to be looked at in concert as we move forward when we talk about value. Okay. And so if we can just look back and look at us as a whole and say, you know, yeah, this is a really good project. I'm excited about it as well. I think the Y really is a great anchor position for this property. But again, as a PUD as a whole, I think we need a filtering system that looks at these projects and says, okay, what is the return to the local? What are we giving up in returns to the county as a whole? And whatever that is, at least we go in with eyes open and we see what we're doing, and then use this as an example or a way of moving forward with other projects down the road. And I'd like to see us with something that's very, very clear and understandable as we move forward on this stuff. So it's a great project, but we still have things we need to do internally here. So thank you.
And what I might just add in this process is my ask of the Y as well as the music theater is that you do your due diligence, Dory. I'm confident that you have. I'm not so certain on the music theater, but this time required of our staff is super important, and we want to be ready at the end of June to know that we have direction moving forward, that you are either financially solid in this project or we need to then begin looking at other options.
Any other discussion on the motion?
Can I clarify something? So Mr. Wahlquist did a really good job of explaining the purchase and sale agreements. One of the things that we've been contemplating all along is to have an additional agreement along with purchase and sale that survives the sale, is to do some kind of development agreement. And so those are typically, I think, addressing some of the concerns of the commission. What happens if the fundraising is unsuccessful? What happens if something changes? Just there's something that even after we've closed on the property, they still have something that survives that closing that obligates them to fulfill the vision. Because if we do give value to the non-monetary part of the deal, then we need to make sure that happens. And so that's something I just want to be clear that there will probably be multiple coming on. Yeah.
Thanks. Just for clarification, did I hear you call him Mr. Walt?
I know. I had to turn around and see if my dad came in.
Well, I can't use his nickname.
Where's Andy? Andy with the young comment earlier. I just got aged 20 years.
Okay. Any other? There's a motion on the floor.
Although now I have to figure out what my other name is.
There is a motion on the floor. Any other discussion on the motion? Hearing none, I will call for the vote. All those in favor of approving the motion that is now covered on the board, so I can't read it. With a motion to direct staff to proceed with option number 4 as presented and report back to the commission by the second meeting in June. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries unanimously.
Well, thank you very much. This has been quite a slog, and I do really appreciate, I didn't mention all the groups that were involved. So this, as we said, started with conversation from Linda. It's got to be almost 5 or 6 years ago now.
Yeah.
And so it has been quite a journey to get here, and we do really appreciate all the partners.
Well, and I want to thank all the input from the public that we've had over this process. I think we as a commission are all way better educated about what the community wants and what some of the outstanding organizations we have in our community. Thank you all. All right.
Thank you.
Can I just say one more thing?
You bet.
And, Dan, I think this is important for you guys. In summary, I think it's really important to remember what are the benefits. Why did we do this in the first place? We needed to serve our customers better by moving out to Old Station. We need to have one campus instead of people running all around. I want to remind people that in the study that we did, the staff did several years ago, if we didn't do anything, it would take, in 17 years, we would have spent as much money just with inefficiencies, buildings that needed to be worked on, et cetera. We would have paid for a brand new facility. So, you know, I think going back to Karnan's good points, one of the things that we're doing as a benefit to our entire community is providing better service to that community. And the offshoot or one of the consequences of doing that provides the vacating of this property, which now we've taken a big step in providing another improvement to our community and the quality of life in our community by doing something very thoughtful by working hand in hand with the community here on this. So I'm excited about that. I think it's a win-win situation as we get ready to move out to our new facility to provide better service and quality to our community. So I just wanted to tie that back in. Why did we do this in the first place?
And if I might just add one thing, you know, some of the cities you go to, it's that cultural core that it makes it so vibrant and fun. So I hope that this all works out. I think it can be a game changer for our downtown. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Okay, audit committee update.
Yep, I'd like to invite Stacy Jagla for the annual audit committee update. I'm guessing you were hoping everybody was here for the audit.
Stacy Jagla, internal audit manager. Yeah, I'm trying really hard not to take this personally that everybody's leaving right before the audit report. This is good stuff. Oh, thank okay. you. Scroll through like that, or do you want to? Oh, yeah, full page would be great. Perfect. I hope it's readable for everybody. So again, Stacy Jagla, internal audit manager. I'm here to just give a highlight of the audit committee report to the full board of commissioners. If you recall, the audit committee was created to provide functional reporting independence for internal audit. While audit committees were required in publicly traded companies, it was considered a best practice for the district at the time that we implemented this. The committee meets quarterly and consists of the president and vice president of the Board of Commissioners and five senior team members. Commissioners Congdon and McKenna served on the committee in 2022 and were welcoming Commissioner Smith in 2023. Our first meeting will be in March. So the quarterly summaries in the report show the areas of focus for the committee based on our charter. First, you'll see reports by external auditors. PricewaterhouseCoopers audits the district's financial statements, and we received a clean, unqualified opinion from them for their 2021 audit. You'll also see reports from the state auditor's office. They have authority to audit all local government, and they review several things: compliance with the Energy Independence Act, specific to our conservation and renewable energy targets. Within the past 5 years, they're also responsible for auditing our Clean Energy Transformation Act. And they also perform an annual accountability audit that reviews adherence to state law, and they audit records to ensure public funds are accounted for and controls are in place to protect public resources from misappropriation and misuse. I did want to note that our 2022 accountability audit by the state was not conducted. They reached out to us to let us know that they didn't have enough resources for their staff to conduct our audit. It is performed by their local Wenatchee office, but they've been going through some staffing challenges, and they asked if we could postpone their audit to 2023. So when they come this fall, they'll actually be conducting a two-year audit for us. So we also report other external audits like Department of Revenue and Labor and Industries, either shared by accounting or internal audit. We also have a financial reporting section of our charter that we talk about. Accounting provides information on new standards, requirements, and year-end adjustments specific to our financial reporting and financial statements. There you can see there was a highlight there in our June meeting from accounting. The committee also approves internal audits work plan, and we have good discussion around what internal audit's going to take a look at for the year. So you'll see throughout each quarter the results of the reviews that internal audit has performed. We share those with the committee along with the recommendations that we've made to management for improvement, and then management's action plans as well. And also you'll see an enterprise risk management component. They provide updates to the committee on district risks and resulting mitigation or action plans associated with our enterprise risk management function. And lastly, the committee hears about compliance topics via a broad range. And Mr. Walquist usually speaks to our compliance topics as the chief compliance officer. So that's kind of the highlight. Again, those are the areas that we meet quarterly and discuss. And just wanted to always thank our commissioners for their participation and enthusiastic discussion and questions at the audit committee, and look forward to another good year.
Commissioner Carnan.
I feel like I'm dominating this meeting. Stacy, you're doing a great job. I mean, my experience with you, you're always right on top of everything, and I appreciate that. Is that sometimes you've straightened me out as well in some of my things. So, anyway, very good. My question now, it came up in a discussion, is what is the commissioner's flexibility in requesting an internal audit, and what are the sideboards, or I guess what's flexibility if, let's say if I wanted an audit on our budget, for instance, would that be something that would be appropriate?
Sure. I think there's a couple ways we take care of that. So annually, when we develop our audit plan for the upcoming year in the fall, we meet with about 60 employees and just talk about things going on, how our process is working, any improvements we can assist with. We also meet with all of the commissioners and ask them the same questions. So, you know, anything we could take a look at. So at that time, we get ideas from the commissioners as well.
Now, can a specific commissioner request an internal audit on a specific item?
Yeah, so how we would handle that outside of that process. So our audit plan is flexible because we want to be adding value and be where there might be risks that come up. So if there was something that came up during the year that you thought was of value for us to take a look at, we would bring that to the audit committee and say we've had a suggestion to look at XYZ, and because we have a plan, we would need to prioritize that in with our work and maybe have a discussion like, if we do XYZ because we think that's a value, maybe we can't look at that this year. And so I think the committee, since they approve our plan, we would just have discussion and make sure everybody's on board with us shifting gears into that area.
So, I mean, if I ask for a specific request, that still has to go through the committee process and then before it's approved. So it's not automatic.
Right. Because something on our plan then likely wouldn't occur because we need to spend time on that, which is great.
Okay.
We just want the committee to make sure everybody's on board with that, since they approve our work plan at the beginning of the year. Any other further comments?
Yeah, Commissioner, I'd just say I fully agree with everything Stacy described as our normal and usual process. I would say the only caveat really to that is if it was something that came to the concern of any commissioner or the board as a commission, we would, if we felt it was appropriate, we would add it. And we would do it. So if there was a concern that was driving that, that there was a need to know the answer for, the board can always give us direction, and we would likely even initiate that at a staff level to report to the board.
Okay. And, so,
again, each year, thanks for a further reminder, each year we as commissioners have the opportunity, is there anything that we have concerns that we then share with the committee and address?
Yeah, that's correct. And if you save them up, if you don't save them up, send them to us, because we will either make a decision about
as you
go throughout the years, is this something that is we need to elevate in priority, or do we just save it up and we bring that back at the planning time for the next year's audit?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, right? For sure. Yeah, if it's something, yeah, urgent, we don't want you waiting until right. I come to meet with you in October, November, if there's something sooner. So please, right. Yeah, sure. Let us know. We're flexible.
Thank you. That answers my question.
Yep, you're welcome. Thanks.
Commissioners, if we're done, I'm going to say thanks to Stacy and her whole team and the extraordinary work of the expanded team that supports the audit committee. It's really an exciting transformation. We had a good relationship with the state auditor some 13 years plus ago, and I think we have, through the work of Stacy's team and the larger team, many of whom John Stoll has hired away from our audit team at this point, I think we have an exceptional relationship with the state auditor now, and always look forward to the comments that they bring, opportunities to improve our program. So it takes a lot of effort by a lot of people, and just really want to say thank you.
Just a quick curiosity question. How many years running have we had a clean audit?
Oh, you're jinxing.
You had to ask.
I know. I'm trying to remember the last finding that we had. Was maybe around 2001 that had to do with our fiber program and the money with the ESD.
Right.
So it's been
a great record.
It's been a really long time since we've had a significant finding.
I might precipitate a letter, but not.
Right. Yeah. I think we've had a couple management letters in there related with procurement stuff. But
keep up the good work.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
But I also think that's indicative of the relationship that our team has built with the state auditor. We can pick up the phone and call, and they provide input and assistance. They're providing that outside of the scope of the audit often. So, I mean,
and
I think, a really productive relationship.
Karen, you know this, but Kelly may not as a new commissioner. As we, as commissioners, have representatives that serve on this committee, we can always ask questions that come from the commissioners. And as well as our state and private auditors that come in, we meet with them without staff,
right,
and can have the opportunity to ask any questions. And we also get, all of us as commissioners, get reports on those audits. So if there's any concerns, I mean, so it's a great accountability system that's set up, and we're part of that. So
yes, all commissioners have access to all the audit committee records.
Yep, and I can show you where that is on our SharePoint, our audit committee site, all the reports we publish on that. And even if you're not serving on the committee at that time, you can go in and certainly look and read our audit reports and our plans published out there too. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Stacy.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thanks, Stacy.
Okay.
Next up, got Mark Mullins and Dave Nelson for the fourth quarter financial review and investment report.
All right. Thank you, Kirk, and good morning, commissioners. I'm Mark Mullins, the Director of Enterprise Planning, Risk, and Analytics, and to my right is
Dave Nelson, Manager of Strategic Financial Planning.
So today we're going to share with you our preliminary year-end 22 financial results. This presentation does support a number of resolutions that require quarterly reporting to the board, including our long-range financial policies, business line financial policies, our investment policy, as well as the board's balanced scorecard objective to maintain strong financial stewardship. So in the interest of time, we'll go through the presentation, but certainly open for questions along the way. So today we're going to cover our financial highlights for 2022, our year-end results, and again, this is preliminary results subject to audit. We'll take a look back, also a look forward in our five-year forecast, take a peek at our investment report, and leave you with some key takeaways. This is an update only, so no action required today. We do have a lot of information in the back, in the appendix, but we don't plan on presenting that today. So our bottom line results are better than budget by $135 million for a number of factors, but primarily higher revenues and lower operating expenses leading to those strong results. One of the drivers is the strong wholesale market prices that we've experienced in 2022 and in particular December, that added significant retained surplus proceeds from our long-term cost-based contract. Additionally, an amendment to a cost-based contract mid-year added an additional benefit to our bottom-line results as well, as we continue to gain value from the carbon-free value of our hydropower, contributing to those strong results as well. And we'll get into some of the details as we get into the presentation. From a capital spending perspective, lower than budget, but making really good progress as we continue to invest in our core assets, with some slowed supply chain issues, some project schedules getting shifted to future periods, but making really good progress on our capital spending and program. Our financial targets are on track. Our financial metrics were met for 2022, and we are on track for the five-year forecast. So looking at our income statement from a service revenue perspective, service revenue ended up being $3 million better than budget. We do have the positive impacts of the market-priced component of our off-system end-use sale that was more than offsetting the lower usage that they experienced in 2022. And further offsetting that is our HDL load growth that is continuing to lag behind budget from a revenue perspective. On the net wholesale revenue, ended up $9 million below budget. We did have an unusual December with extreme weather conditions. We had a much higher load usage versus budget. We had lower stream flow conditions, meaning lower generation. So that means we have less surplus generation to sell into the market. So that was resulting in a main contributor to the net wholesale revenue being below budget for the year. I would say on a positive note, we did experience higher wholesale prices for the year. So we did get a chance to benefit through that throughout the year, contributing to our strong financial results. On the hydro long-term contract revenue, $105 million better than budget. The primary driver here is the retained surplus proceeds from a cost-based contract at $106 million. Additionally, I mentioned the amendment to a cost-based contract where we are able to capture the value of our hydro power. That was an additional $7 million for the year. And partially offsetting that is lower cost of production. The hydro O&M came a little bit lower, coming in at 91% cost of production. Looking at our other operating revenue, $11 million above budget. The primary driver there is the variable portion of our real-time agreement, $8 million. And when the prices are high and the volatility is high, then we benefit from that contract. So total revenues for 2022, $110 million, better than budget. On the expense side, lower O&M primarily at the hydros, as we've seen adjusted project schedules coming in about 75% of budget. Our non-operating net expense, $3 million better than budget with higher customer line extensions and contributions. And then we've also experienced higher interest earnings with higher cash balances and interest rates benefiting that expense bucket. So total net expenses, $25 million below budget, and that has a positive bottom line impact to the district. So from a bottom line perspective, as mentioned, higher revenues, lower expenses. Our bottom line was $198 million for the year. If we pulled out the net retained surplus proceeds of $106 million, ongoing operations would have generated a bottom line of $92 million for the year, or $29 million better than budget. When we do consider the net surplus proceeds that we retained, $135 million better than budget for the year. Looking at our balance sheet, capital spending, spent $140 million for the year, $61 million below budget. You'll see in the next section below, we did have a number of really key projects for the district, just through the project schedules. As we continue to execute on those efforts, some of those project schedules are extending into future years, as well as the spending associated with that. So I won't go through these individually, but work around the operations and service center, Rock Island Powerhouse 1 and 2, as well as some substation work are primary contributors to that. But I would like to note, as we continue to execute on our 2020 through 2024 strategic plan, over the last 3 years, we've spent $420 million on our capital plan. So really significant spending as we continue to invest in our core assets. From a cash perspective, end of the year at $540 million. This is $32 million better than we ended up at the year end from last year. Strong bottom line results. We did have a deposit from Microsoft to support the substation work associated with that future load, and also lower capital spending contributing to those results. So,
how much was that deposit?
I believe it was
a little over $42
million. 42?
$42.5 million.
Thank you.
Yep. And that'll contribute to the work that we have going on right now. So from a budget perspective, ending up at $183 million higher than our forecast at budget. As mentioned, strong bottom line, lower capital spending, and the deposit from Microsoft that'll contribute to that future work. From a debt perspective, our debt balance is $349 million at the end of the year. This included our planned net reductions of $47 million, so right in line with budget. And that's the high-level overview, and unless there's any questions on that, I'll turn it over to Dave, and he can jump into the details. Yes, Commissioner.
Okay, you mentioned that, you know, we're $135 million better than budget. Does that include the $60 million below in capital expenditures? Is that added into that, or is that?
No, that would be a separate item. So okay. The $61 million below is considered part of our capital plan.
Right.
So as we...
I just want to know if you added that into that for the...
Nope, that would be completely separate. The $135 million would be separate as better than budget from a bottom line perspective.
Mark. So on a cash flow thing, you could add that to the $135, the $61 million for a year if we're below that.
Yes, if and we you'll see that in a slide that. Later in the presentation.
Oh.
Yeah, from a cash
okay.
perspective.
Okay, all right. Thank you. Sorry. Yep. Anyway, it just kind of flagged out on me. So sorry. Go ahead.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. So this slide details the 2022 bottom line results that Mark just discussed, with the $198 million bottom line compared to the about $63 million budget bottom line. As you know, just to note that the long-term hydro contract revenues is where you'll see the retained surplus proceeds, as well as the environmental attributes associated with one of those contracts. So that's why that figure is quite a bit above budget from a revenue perspective. Very strong results. Looking at our individual business lines, the integrated electric, of course, mirrors the overall district results. So those are we've already pretty well discussed. Fiber and telecom results are better than budget, mostly due to less make-ready work with the poles that were planned for the year that was pushed off into future years. The water results are slightly below budget, both due to slightly lower revenues than budgeted, as well as slightly higher O&M expenses. And a wastewater, the results are a slightly larger loss than we had budgeted, primarily to a little bit higher O&M expenses related to some upcoming large projects, O&M expenses mm-hmm. there. So overall, again, the $198 million bottom line. Taking a look at capital expenditures from a system perspective, as Mark mentioned, the primary drivers of the spending lagging our budget at $141 million versus the $201 was the modernization work at Rock Island, as well as the operations and service center. Electric distribution lagged budget due to some substation schedule revisions, pushed those out into the future. Network transmission, we actually added $5 million to the capital budget during the year related to the Microsoft switchyard. And so then that project schedule is realigned a bit, and so did not spend most of that money. Rocky Reach lagged budget due to some electrical upgrade projects, as well as the crane project that have been pushed out into future years. Rock Island, we mentioned the modernization results. Lake Chelan, we had a large project for an auto closure gate, as well as some automation of spillway gates that were pushed off into future years. And then internal services, where the operations and service center budget is. Fiber and telecom, we had lower PPB expansion spending than was budgeted. Water, there were a couple of projects, a water main replacement, some SCADA replacement that got deferred a little bit. still spent 80% of the budget, and wastewater a little bit under due to some projects associated with some Dryden project expenses, early expenses to that project. So just a note that you know, most of the under budget that we're talking about here is really related to project deferrals. We do expect to expend those money in future years and have been pushed out in our forecasts.
Excuse me, though, but they were anticipated in an expenditure in the year.
That's right. It's a capital expenditure, so it's not part of our O&M and our bottom line results, but it is an expenditure, a cash expenditure that we expected to have happen.
And there's value associated with those expenditures, am I correct?
Say that again.
There's value to the district in those expenditures.
Yes.
If they're
yes.
budgeted.
That's right. We believe that we're creating value by investing in the district's assets.
Right.
And so we'd like to try to stay as close as we can and spend those when we have planned them. But there were a lot of issues, supply chain constraints.
Correct. But I mean, that is part of the budgeting process.
Right.
Right. Okay.
I would also add one of the things, particularly when you look at the large dollar items where we came short, there is value in those expenditures. Many times it's things that we encounter along the way that we adjust for to make sure that we have a quality outcome. And so that's one of the things that you'll see some of the service center items, as well as some of the Rock Island modernization. If we encounter something that requires more work than we originally anticipated, that does create an impact on the schedule, but it's because we want to do that work in addition to what we had planned. That makes sense.
It does make sense, but in my opinion, it it needs to be more realistic in our approach going forward. I'm not trying to be critical, but it you know, when you have this kind of expenditure that isn't achieved, that and it's assumed that it's value to the district, I think we need to look at that and say, are we losing value by not accomplishing our goal? Because that was a goal that was anticipated at the beginning of the budget process, correct?
Right. Okay. I think fortunately for us, a lot of the projects, while they do add value, we haven't seen us being hurt by those things. I don't think we're losing the value in the immediate term. The projects that need to be done, we're going to achieve that value by doing the projects, but there's just a delay in getting them done.
Okay, thank you.
So this is the slide I was talking about, provides that overview of cash flows. We start out with our bottom line result of the $198 million, add back some non-cash expenses, depreciation and amortization of $52 million. We also have some non-cash revenue items associated with some upfront payments we received on long-term contracts, $14 million, so estimated earned funds from operations of $236 million. We had $141 million of capital project expenditures, $47 million of debt, net debt activity. We received $42 million net is remaining on the customer deposit for Microsoft. And then we had other miscellaneous impacts to our balance sheet and other things. Of the $58 million use of cash there, the biggest item is about a $43 million increase in accounts receivable associated with a high power sales in December that was then collected in early January. So an estimated use of funds of $204 million, resulting in a net add of $32 million, bringing us from the $508 to the $540 million at the end of the year. So taking a look at where those cash balances are maintained, our unrestricted funds increased substantially due to the strong bottom line results. We also added, the board also added to the electric rate support fund through the rate increases. And there was also $25 million added to the headquarters strategic service, strategic facilities fund. And of course, we used some of that during the year. So the net amount was a decrease in $8 million, but there was $25 million added during the year. We do anticipate using the remainder of those funds in 2023 with completion of the facility. Then you can see our total liquidity overall remained fairly consistent from 2021 at 420 versus 415. And there's a number of restricted items, and you can see there the customer deposit for Microsoft, And I would also note that we'd used up the last of the construction funds from the 2020 bonds. This slide provides a historical review of the district's operations. You can see really the kind of highlights the increasing costs, expense in order to maintain the district's operations, both in our O&M and the capital expenditures, really highlighting the last 3 years as part of the strategic plan and investing in assets. You can see the investment Mark talked about of around $420 million in the last 3 years. Next slide, you can see that due to the strong financial results over the past years here in recent times, we have been able to increase our cash balances through 2019 and decrease debt during that time, as we were able to self-finance most of our or all of our capital during that time. In 2020, we did do a debt refinance, and we held on to some of that cash due to the uncertainties related to the pandemic. In 2021, we went ahead and then paid down the debt we had planned to as part of that refinance. And then in 2022, you can see the strong results result in increasing cash as well as a continued pay down of debt.
Could you refresh my memory what our anticipated pay down is for this year?
For 2023? I don't have that on the top of my head. Let's see.
Doesn't have it at the top of his head, but he has it on the top of his hand.
Yeah, well, I see three people looking for it, so.
Everybody's scrambling.
So would the payoff be any different than last year? The amount?
It varies, the pay down.
Sorry, $38 million.
$38 million this year? Okay. Thank you.
How do you decide on the amount you're paying down?
So the amounts we're paying down this year as well as what we're planning for last year, we're based primarily on the debt schedules. There is a small payment we have been accelerating 6 months ahead in order to improve our debt coverage ratio. In the past, we had some opportunities as debt was coming up. It became callable, and we had an opportunity to pay off debt early. And so we took advantage of some of those things in order to save interest over the life of the loans. At this point, most of our bonded indebtedness does not have call provisions, doesn't allow us to call it. So we don't anticipate doing any significant reductions of debt outside of our scheduled payments over the next few years. But there's always, Treasury is always looking for opportunities to see where that might change or we have an opportunity to do something different.
Okay.
So we're always trying to balance our cash balances with our operating needs, capital expenditures, as well as balance our debt levels.
Thank you.
Okay, this slide is showing the district's financial policies, and you can see we're expecting to be in compliance with all of our financial policies throughout the next few years through 2026. I would note that our days cash on hand in 2023 is yellow. That means that we anticipate being within 10% of the metric. And I would, as we just continue to use cash to fund our operations as well as our pay down of or as well as our capital expenditures and pay down of debt. I would note that our days cash on hand is a metric that is influenced by increasing expenses as well as high power prices that we've seen lately, and that influences that metric. And then at the bottom of the page, I would draw your attention to the bottom line results, which are expected to be strong throughout the forecast period here, as well as our debt outstanding, which is expected to continue to make our scheduled payments and reduce down to about $200 million 2026. Looking at our individual business lines, these are our forecasts for 2024. We have some mixed results looking forward, and we're trying to make progress in these systems. We continue to have some opportunities there. Looking at the red metrics, those are areas where we are anticipating that we will not be meeting our targets in 2024. with the operating cover percentage. All three systems are missing that metric, but they're fairly close to where we need to be. We've seen somewhat higher expenses moving forward, and we'll continue to monitor those. With the cash reserves for water, as well as the debt service for wastewater, those metrics were set during a little bit different planning assumptions, and so we'll be looking to correct those as we review our plans for those two systems. Okay, this is a look at our quarterly investment report, and as you can see, we're in compliance with most of our policy objectives and all of our policy compliance requirements. As we discussed with you last quarter, Heather Ireland was here to talk about the return on investment, where we're not meeting our policy objective. Our returns on our portfolio are slightly below or below where the three-month treasury bill, which is the policy standard that we use to evaluate that metric. And I would just draw your attention to the last column there, the WHAM, not to be confused with the 1980s pop duo WHAM. That's the weighted average maturity of our investment portfolio. And at 904 days of the district's portfolio, that represents about 2.5 years that our investments have to go to mature. And we ladder our investment purchases in order to stabilize our returns over time, as well as get a good, better return over the long term. In environments where rates are falling, our returns stay higher and look attractive compared to the market. In an environment where we saw in this last year where short-term rates shot up very rapidly, our portfolio being invested in longer maturity investments lags that change. You can see that in the three-month T-bill as that rate increased from less than 1% to over 4% in the fourth quarter. As you can see, the weighted average maturity of that comparative portfolio is 91 days. So that portfolio rolls over much quicker, and you see the response much quicker to those rate changes. Looking at our return did increase to 2.42% in the fourth quarter and compares very favorably to indexes of comparable weighted average maturity. As an example, the 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury Index has a weighted average maturity of 692 days, and our returns are better than that particular index as a different comparative. I just want to make sure I catch a couple of these things here. We did see an improvement because of both the increased cash balances and the improved interest rates of our interest earnings during the quarter, increasing from about $2.9 million to $3.4 million for the quarter. Expect market rates to continue to increase a little bit, at least in the short-term basis. And we plan to continue our laddered approach to our investments to maintain that overall stable investment return. We did do a refinement to our banking investment policy during the year to improve efficiency and improve the security of signer information. And there was one initiator added and one initiator removed due to changes in human resources staffing. No other signer changes or banking changes in the past quarter. So summarizing our key takeaways, our results are much better than budget this year, both due to our ongoing operations. We also benefited from some infrequent revenues that we can't really count on every year. We accomplished significant level investment in the core assets on our strategic path to ensure long-term value this year. Our capital plans continue to be significant. We expect to utilize quite a bit of our excess cash in order to fund those plans. We are financially healthy. We're on track with our financial metrics. The district is forecasting no additional external debt issuance. We do expect to issue internal debt to fund our hydro program, capital program, and there'll be a presentation resolution coming to the board to talk about some internal loans for the hydros in an upcoming meeting soon. Would note that inflation and supply chain issues are continue to impact our projects, but they are manageable and continue to be evaluated for our future forecasts. And staff recommends staying the course and continuing to execute on the 2020 to 2024 strategic plan. That's our presentation for today. As Mark mentioned, there is an appendix with quite a bit more detail, and we're happy to answer any questions about those, or if you are looking through it later, feel free to send me your questions and I'll get some answers to all of you on those.
Commissioner Arsenault, you have your hand up.
Thank you. Appreciate that. I just have first a comment and then followed by a question. The comment I'd like to make is really just congratulations on the great fiscal management of our finance department. To say that they are in the top tier of fiscal management would be an understatement. They do an excellent job every year and have brought us to this destination where we are today. So please, Mark and Dave, take that message back to your office and to your peers and share with them just how pleased I am as a commissioner to see this report and to see it year after year. Now, as a comment, more of a question, do you have any idea or any data on what other public utilities exist that are headed into an expected debt ratio in 2023 of 16%? Are there any?
I don't
observation.
Yeah, I don't have that information right here for certain.
Yeah, I'm going to wager a guess. You could look all day long and not find any other. So excellent job. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Arsenault.
Any other questions?
I don't know. I have a question.
Okay.
Comment also. I mean, you know, I've seen this utility at a different place, and we had problems at getting through the year and how we were going to finance certain things budgetarily. We're in a different place today, happily, and you've done a great job getting us there. I mean, I've been able to watch this evolve over the years, and truly we have different problems ahead of us now, completely different, but it's a good place to be. It really is. So thank you very much for your diligence and your work that you've done. It's something to be very proud of. My question then is, it just has to do with an issue that I dealt with back in the day, and it was the unrestricted funds. And there was a methodology around what that number was going to be. And if I recall right, that was about $185 million that was set aside for, you know, unrestricted. And there was a methodology around that. Mm-hmm. Do we still use that methodology for our unrestricted funds today?
Yes, so we have a liquidity reserves methodology.
And it's, yeah, I guess that's what I'm talking about.
Your memory was really good. It's the greater of the methodology or $175 million. So the methodology includes things like contingency planning, having reserves set aside for things that we don't know about, future debt obligations or capital planning or O&M expenditures. And we can share more details on what that methodology entails, but what we're holding aside from a liquidity perspective is the greater of that methodology and calculation,
mm-hmm.
or $175 million.
Okay. I guess I was under the impression that the better we did financially, that number would go down, but maybe not. I guess I was thinking wrong. And the better we do, the larger that reserve unrestricted funds is.
So it does incorporate, so the methodology does incorporate things of uncertainty, like I mentioned,
okay.
but it also considers the rising capital plans that we've seen over the last several years.
Okay.
In the historical slide, as well as O&M.
Okay.
So it considers those factors as our obligations are higher,
yeah.
in the future, so we want to consider that.
I get it now, because our capital expenditure is much greater than it was back then. Yep. Okay, thank you.
Yep. You're welcome. And thank you for the compliments, mm-hmm. Commissioner Bergeron. It really is strong financial results, and it really starts with our 5-year strategic plan, and that's board approved, certainly. So we appreciate all of the leadership from our board, the executive team, our general manager, Kirk Hudson. It really takes all of us to be able to execute on those plans. Having a plan in place with the ability to adapt and shift gears, I think has been, we've been put in a position where we can do that. So I would say lots of compliments to people across the district and staff who execute on these plans to put us in the position that we're in today. Really good results. I'm happy to report those.
Thank you. Any other questions? Poor clock management on my part. We're 15 minutes late for lunch.
Nope.
Oh, well. Is there any other public comment before we recess for lunch? If not, we'll recess and we'll reconvene at 1:10 to give us 55 minutes. Okay. Thank you.
Dave and Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. It is about 1:10. Tuesday afternoon, February 21, 2023, we met this morning as a PUD commission in study session. This afternoon, we are reconvening for our business session, and let's proceed.
Okay. Good afternoon. Agenda item number 10 is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 18 through 21 and further approving.
Kirk, could I stop you for a second? I goofed up. I gave you control too soon.
Nope.
I have a consent agenda I need to get approved. Yep.
You did you see her? She was panicked.
Yes. So first item on the agenda for this afternoon, and Steve, I'm going to hand this back over to you here pretty soon. First item on the agenda is our consent agenda, which we modified this morning to include resolution number 11. Is there a motion to approve the consent agenda?
So moved. Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion?
Including number 11.
Including number 11.
11. Yep.
Since there's no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
I know you're for it, Gary. So we. All right. Very good. Now, Kirk.
Okay. Take two. Agenda item number 10 is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 18 through 21 and further approving field work order change order number 22 for the service center project with Absher Construction Company of Puyallup, Washington for construction of the service center project pursuant to general contractor construction manager contract number 18-91. And with us is David Lodge and Dan Frazier.
Good afternoon, commissioners. David Lodge, Project Management Manager.
Dan Frazier, Director of Shared Services.
So this resolution has two parts, as Kirk mentioned. The first is ratifying fieldwork order change orders 18 through 21, and then the second is approving change order 22. So the ratification covers change orders that have previously been approved and issued to the contractor. And change order 18 was for retaining wall that was added along the entrance of the campus. This was added scope to the contractor, so it was competitively bid out under the GCCM contractor and was awarded to Pipkin Construction, and they're going to be starting work next week. That added $242,000 to the total project amount, total contract. Change order 19 was for various changes, 29 separate issues, and they're detailed in an appendix in the resolution. And some of these included some owner-requested technology changes. So we added a number of outlets for wireless access points for our Wi-Fi coverage. We added some backbone cabling for our telecommunication systems and made some revisions to sound masking and paging systems, among other items. That added $469,000 to the contract. Change order 20 extended contract time by 90 days while we were negotiating the change order that's being presented today, and costs associated with that change in time will be included in subsequent change orders. And then change order 21 was for various changes for 23 separate issues totaling $182,000, again detailed in the back of the resolution. So that brings the total contract amount to $107,787,940. So the change order 22 that we're presenting today is the first of first change order related to project delays resulting from cultural resources discovered on site. So this was a challenging one to negotiate because it covers contract time. So the first thing, it changes the turnover plan for the project. So originally, contractor planned to complete all of the scope and turn it all over at once. And so under this change order, we're extending contract time to the end of the year, but with three phases of turnover. So the first phase will be in the spring, turning over the administrative building, the four-story building, and that'll allow us to start moving administrative staff into the building, staff that's not tied to the field or public interface. And then phase two will turn over operations building to support field ops moving onto the campus in the fall. And as we bring in that critical mass of people, we'll be able to open up to the public. So we're planning to open up in October. And then finally, the third phase will be the Fish and Wildlife building and fleet shop will allow us to bring the final couple of departments over to the new campus and realize the full vision of consolidating all of our non-hydro operations on one campus. So by negotiating this turnover schedule and total contract time, it lays the groundwork for costs associated with the GCCM, our general contractor, construction manager, as well as costs for the trade contractors working under the GCCM. So this change order covers costs for the GCCM, which include their specified general conditions, that's their staff to manage the project, extended for about a year's time, and negotiated support services. And this is all of the field support services that the general contractor provides, such as temp fencing, sanitation, trash removal, temp heat, and weather protection. So included in this change order are the GCCM costs in the amount of $2,052,856, which would bring the total contract to $109,840,796. So we still have additional change orders to process from the trade contractors, but this change and those future changes are in alignment with the variance that we presented in November and the budget revision that was approved by the board in December with the annual budget. In closing, this is shaping up to be the most challenging year for the project. We have an aggressive schedule to complete construction and a complicated logistics for relocating staff on a scale this utility has never experienced. But when we finally get moved into the new campus and start to see how all of those design workshops pay off, we'll be working in a physical environment that better facilitates our ability to serve our customer owners and continue to enhance the quality of life in Chelan County. Thank you.
Any questions? Any excitement?
There you go.
Took me a bit to get that button. I don't have any questions. I wanted to thank you both for taking so much time to walk me around the service center. It would be really hard for me to take a lot of this in if I hadn't done that tour with you, and to really appreciate your comment on the logistics in making the move. Particularly from an IT perspective, that looks overwhelming. So I'm glad you guys are handling it. Thank you. And it's also good for me to know that this was already approved in the amended budget. So,
I'm sitting there thinking that I remember the number we came up with in the amended budget, and hopefully we can still stay under it. Well.
So we'll be coming back several times as these go forward. This is the foundational one. It's all about time, and there was delay in time, and this sets that time. So now we've come to agreement on time, so the rest become easier to negotiate. And we've got a lot of those in hand. It's just now that we have the time set, we can negotiate the impacts.
Maybe not easier to negotiate, but allow one of the uncertain pieces to be more certain.
If you're negotiating on an unknown, it's really tough to negotiate. And actually, we've had some really good progress in the last couple months with our trade contractors. So understanding, you do have, once you get a common agreement, this was the impact, now the impacts, the financial impacts that they're telling us about really are tied to something real. And they can do the same. They can look at their costs and say, yeah, this is our cost.
Yeah. So did I hear you correctly to say that the total delay you estimate to have been about 10 months?
About a year.
It's about a year.
Yeah, with multiple pieces.
And in the highest inflation year we've experienced in the last 45 years.
Sometimes you just roll snake eyes, right?
Yeah. That's tough timing. That's really tough timing. So, okay. Any other questions, comments?
No.
Looking forward to the end of the year. Bet you are too.
Yes.
Okay. Commissioners, Resolution 10 needs to be voted on. Is there a motion to approve?
I move to approve Resolution number 10.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve Resolution number 10. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Manager items. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I've got three items. I'd like to invite Ron Slabaugh up. Ron's going to give us an update on some regional water system developments.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ron Slabaugh, Water and Wastewater Manager, here to discuss a fourth addendum to the agreement that Regional Water System has with Crown Columbia. It seems that we've been here not too long ago. It's because we were back in December, and that was for approval of the third addendum. Before I get into that, Commissioner Allen, for your benefit, I'd like to provide just a brief summary of what we're talking about here with regional and regionals water rights.
Thank you.
So regional, of course, is made up Chelan PUD, City of Wenatchee, East Wenatchee Water District. Collectively, we serve about 75,000 people. Back in 2012, we purchased some excess water right that the Pioneer Water Users Association had, an irrigation association that serves from about Monitor down the Columbia River. They made some improvements to their system that made some additional water rights available, and regional purchased that. I don't recall the exact amounts, but it was on the order of about 2,000 acre feet of water for about $2.5 million. And that water was put into the trust program that the state has, and that secures that water for a number of reasons, but primarily to keep it from being relinquished. Relinquishment is something that can occur. Think of it as use it before you lose it. And if, in general, there's a bit more to it, that if a water right, say, is not utilized for 5 years, it's potentially subject to relinquishment. But the trust program preserves it and protects it from relinquishment. Regional was approached a few years after that, 2012, about leasing that water out, making it available for a beneficial use within the state by a company called Crown that was building up another type of trust water rights program. Regional worked with our attorneys, Pete Fraley of ONW Law, very qualified, seasoned water rights attorney, and he does have a passion for taking water that's available and making it well available for beneficial usage. But that's secondary to his passion of preserving his clients' rights and protecting those water rights. So it took quite some time to put this agreement together with Crown where that water could be made available, but also protecting regional's water rights from potential relinquishment. And the way that that was done was through a primary agreement plus some addendums, and the addendums were created a seasonal change application that allowed the water to be used for an irrigation season but ultimately remain in trust. And Pete will assert today that that water right is indeed in trust. So the third addendum that was approved back in December was just the same as the first and the second, to make that water available for a Crown or Crown's client, Granite Farms, down the Port of Walla Walla area to utilize that water. But this particular year, Ecology, in processing that application, looked at it with some additional scrutiny and opined that it was not really an appropriate use of the seasonal change application process. So Pete informed the regional members and had some conversations with Ecology directly about it. And sure enough, Ecology did not want to utilize that process, but they contemplated another process utilizing a temporary change application. As I mentioned, Pete is very passionate about preserving his clients' water rights. One of the concerns that was raised, in fact, the regional members had a meeting in January that Commissioner Bergeron and myself attended, is just doing everything that we can to preserve those. And so that temporary change application will be effective for only a two-year period. That way, if what happened with the seasonal change applications were ever challenged, that we would have that water right put back into trust before that five-year period. So the water was used in 21 and 2022. The temporary change application will make it available for 23 and 24. So that's a four-year period, and then it reverts back into trust where it's fully protected. During that period, there is another potential option, so we don't have to keep coming back to the board on an annual basis, utilizing this process called a water budget neutral process. So Pete will work with Crown and work with Ecology to see if that can come to fruition. And if not, the agreement with Crown will terminate in 2024 and without another alternative, and they'll just no longer use that regional water right for their irrigation purposes. One thing I didn't mention is what's been in this for regional. Regional for the first 2 years received payments from Crown for that right of just over $200,000 per year. So the original agreement had contemplated use of that water rate through 2032, which is coincidentally, regional would have recouped its $2.5 million it had spent on that water rate in 2012. Regional will have a future expenditure in developing a second source of water. So to the extent that it can come up with additional sources of revenue like this, it's a benefit for everyone. But we want to do that while also protecting our risks. So for today, I just wanted to provide this information. Don't need a decision, certainly request feedback. But ultimately, in order to make this official, we'll have to come back with a resolution approving the GM to sign this fourth amendment to this agreement with Crown. So in a nutshell, that's it. Any questions? Commissioner Bergeron.
Okay, I was there at the meeting. We discussed what you talked about. One of the things that was brought up in the meeting, I just wonder if there's any follow-up in this, was that since it's basically a new contract, a new agreement, they were going to go back and renegotiate the price of, you know, the value of those shares, and I was just wondering if anything has been done on that moving forward as far as getting a new price for the water.
Sure. In his last email, Pete did comment on a discussion he had with Crown. So when we had that meeting in January, this city actually suggested that we consider renegotiating the price, and we requested to have Crown deposit another $50,000 in an account with regional, and they've pushed back on that. You know, the original agreement included some escalation clauses, and they've stated that this is the most expensive water in their portfolio, and they've really pushed back on paying any additional money for it.
Okay. And I think it's well worth the extra dollars. Because Grant, was it Granite Farms. I mean, they certainly has a tremendous amount of value to their operations that they have there, and which would be worthless without it, so to speak. So I think the position we have is a strong position to relook at this value, because it does change over time, and the contract has changed. So it's not the same deal.
What was the annualized cost per acre foot? You said $200,000 a year?
Yeah, regional's getting just over $200,000 a year. And if I remember, it's 2,000 acre foot of consumptive water.
So that's $1,000 an acre foot per year is the rent?
Is the rent.
Yeah, okay. and we're, you know, I mean, I was on the regional water when we did this, and to know that the initial investment is in essence paid back is really pretty amazing. We got a good deal.
Yeah, we were pretty surprised when we were approached by, well, Crown, and they had found this client, Granite Farms, that wanted it all. It was one of the concerns that we had is having the processing associated with small amounts of water. That's the other thing to keep in mind that I didn't mention is that in addition to that $200,000, Crown does pay all the regional's legal fees. So all of Pete's bills, Pete Fraley's bills, are paid by Crown. And for this recent effort, there's quite a few of them.
Thank you. Good update.
Okay.
And thank you for the backstory on it, too.
Sure.
Really appreciate it.
And Kelly, for your information, there's nobody in our utility that knows more about water or wastewater than this guy right here, just so you know.
So I appreciate that. I am a bit guarded discussing water rights because it's a big animal. There's people that make their entire careers specialists and attorneys in water rights. And
but you know where to go to get the answers.
I do.
So Ron will plan to come back on March 6th.
Yep. Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Next, Andy Wendell's going to give us an update on a public meeting this evening for a potential future substation site.
Thanks, Kirk. It's true. Ron knows more about water and wastewater. We're lucky to have him. Ironically, about 8 years ago, the district entered into a purchase and sales agreement for the property for the North Shore substation. It was actually a different piece of property, but... and we took that to the community, and quite frankly, it didn't go over really good, as we all know. And we learned a tremendous amount over that experience, and we've applied a lot of those lessons learned. Our substation property acquisition program looks completely different, largely because of that event. So I am happy to say, however, yesterday was the first day that we broke ground in construction on the North Shore.
I was going to say, there's a cool picture.
Yeah, very. It's huge. My hair color looked a lot different. but we finally got there. So some of those lessons that we learned we're applying here in Wenatchee. As we all know, growth and expansion has driven us to find another substation site in the West Wenatchee area. About a year and a half ago, we engaged a site acquisition process that was looking at about 11 different sites kind of within what we call the load center. The load center is, you could argue, is the kind of the intersection of 5th Street and Western Street. A lot of growth in the West Wenatchee area. So we engaged in looking at what properties would be suitable for an electrical substation in the area. We went through a process internally to try to narrow those down to some more viable ones. We didn't take any of them off the list, and we certainly didn't enter into any purchase and sales agreements. We recognized a need to engage the community, and we are starting that process today, engaging the community. In fact, in that immediate area, there's property owned by the Wenatchee School District as well as the Washington State University Tree Fruit Center. Both of those plots, I would say, they're large plots of land. They both have fantastic attributes in terms of suitable substation locations. The WSU was actually interested in us doing a deeper dive into discovery on their property. And we have done some of that discovery work. We've identified about four pieces of property within that overall plot that would be suitable. So tonight, we're inviting public comment on those four potential sites within the WSU Tree Fruit Research property. We'll be hosting an open house at 5:30 tonight at WSU, right on the campus there. There will be representatives from WSU there, as well as myself and a few other engineers here at the PUD. We'll be providing a brief presentation and just essentially having a two-way conversation about what concerns people have, what thoughts, what ideas they have. We don't necessarily want to mitigate those tonight. Just listen and understand what community concerns are, and then come back and regroup and see if we can move that ball down the field a little bit further. So that's it in a nutshell. I'm happy to answer any questions that you have.
When we did this in Chelan some time ago, and because of the uproar in the community that got involved, it was clear to me at that time that, you know, the process is grueling. It takes a long time, lots of meetings, and are we looking at this thing in a kind of a progressive way? If we go through the process once, shouldn't we look at a future one beyond what we're planning on today and secure a location either through some sort of buy-sell agreement, whatever, but that does allow the growth, the natural growth of a community and of an area to know where the future site will be at some point, and that would affect land values, that would affect, and it would also take away some of our problems in our growth in the PUD, because it's open, transparent, this is where we're going to be. So I would encourage that we look into future locations beyond this with some sort of a, you know, buy-sell agreement or whatever, or purchase. I mean, depending on the availability of these locations, because they're getting fewer and far between. So that's my comment.
Yeah, I really appreciate those comments, Commissioner Bergeron. We're doing two immediate things to respond to that. One is we are doing a lot more in the long-range planning effort. In fact, in a few weeks, we'll be bringing forth our electric load growth presentation that gives a perspective of what substations we have and where we're targeting that. So instead of looking at that 20, 30-year forecast, we're looking at that 50, 60, 70-year forecast in terms of the need for substations. Another very unique thing that we're doing to help mitigate that is engineering has worked really hard to present a new substation standard, which moves us away from our traditional 28 MVA substation, a single transformer, and introducing a second substation transformer in the same footprint. So we have double the capacity, which is a huge mitigation factor. It does require a bit more space, but it is well worth the investment, and we're super excited about that. If you drive out to, if you drive home today on this side of the river, mm-hmm. on the Chelan side, and just right past the Stamilt plant on the right hand side, you'll see our latest substation. It's OMI substation, and it's really the first of our new standard, which is a dual footprint substation and power transformer. So instead of 28 megawatts or MVA, we have 56
okay.
MVA in there. So two things we're working on. But your points are well taken.
Well, thank you. I think that makes sense. I mean, I know there's a location past NEA on the left-hand side going up 97A that's been vacant for a long time, but it's a future site, I believe, right?
Yeah, there's a couple of things going on up there. I mean, if it's immediately past INEAT on the left-hand side, but as you kind of get up towards Navarre Coulee, there's an old substation site up there called Winesap.
Oh, man. And that's what it is. I remember one up there in the rock somewhere in there.
Yeah.
There it is. You know, it's all been leveled and ready to go, but
yeah,
nothing. So.
Yeah. Well, we have that in our back pocket when growth does happen up in that.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So. No, okay. Well, thanks, Andy.
Okay. Appreciate it. Anything else? Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
And the last item was just me reminding you that there's quarterly project reports that are in your board packet. Those are the financial and schedule reports that we provide to the board on a quarterly basis. So let me know if you have any questions on any of those. Yep. That's it for manager items.
Okay.
Commission items. We've got a need to set a special meeting for a strategy partners update. Would welcome a motion to do that. It's on our agenda. It's not up on the screen at the moment. I'm betting that it's going to get there in a hurry, though.
I can make that motion.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to set a special meeting on Friday, April 21st, 2023 at 1 p.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way, Wenatchee, for the purpose of holding a strategy partners update meeting.
Motion's been made. Is there a second?
Second.
Been seconded. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. Now, is there any additional commissioner items that any commissioner wishes to bring forward at this time?
Randy, I have something I'd just like to say.
Sure.
A little pitch for WAPUTA and APPA. So commissioners will be traveling later this month to, matter of fact, I believe on Sunday, to Washington, D.C. To participate in an American Public Power Association and Washington PUD Association conference that will involve getting face-to-face with our legislators back in Washington, D.C. and having an opportunity to bring forward items of importance to not only our region, but to national public power across the country. And so your commissioners will be hard at work back in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. We are all looking forward to it, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Any other? Might this be an okay time to share some of my women in public
Absolutely
power?
Perfect time.
Great. So it was fascinating. You know, I come from WAPUTA, practically hopped on the plane right to Reno, and wouldn't you know, in Portland, there are all these other women from WAPUTA. So it was fantastic having that commonality. But at the conference itself, there were women of all levels in the district. So fleet, people that were in service, people, engineers, obviously, general managers. There were only a handful of commissioners there. It was mostly staff. And that was fabulous to hear from so many different PUDs, the different staff levels, and understanding that we have a commonality with some of the challenges that we're facing. You know, we were talking about workforce issues. It's common, every public utility. And one of the things that they were bringing up, though, which was fascinating, is that how we can tailor to some of this millennial thinking within the PUD, because you have a real, like us, with the longer working mindset of having stability is kind of a contradiction to millennials who want constant change. So they were showing how many utilities have offered many opportunities within their district. So it's like one job and then another job, and providing incentive to continue to grow within the district. And that seems to mitigate some of the turnover. So some fascinating ways that they were working on being creative with keeping staff, including many of them are just completely shut down on Fridays, not just the linemen, but the entire district. Now, many of the districts are quite a bit smaller. But it was also good to have, I was sharing with Kirk, there was somebody from Moss Adams who leads the, she's a partner and she leads the energy sector. So oil and gas, renewables, and also hydro, everything in between. And her perspective is that we have legislation that is just not aware of the challenges. They're putting mandates, but they don't, because it sounds good. It's like environmental and social bling. And with that, as a result, we'll probably have, she's forecasting 10 to 20 years of blackouts if they don't step in and make some changes. So our voice is really important at the WAPUTA level. And the lobbying, because it's just legislators that don't know what they don't know. It just sounds good and feels good. She was talking about the graveyards, the cost to her clients of these windmill graveyards, and how a lot of the solar panels are now coming into the end of their life, and the unknown in the industry based on that, but the costs that are being projected. So it was fascinating all over. I could just go on all day. But the big thing was seeing that there were so many women from all levels of the industry, and I would encourage our commission to think about opportunity to send more females next year. Because it wasn't just women-driven, right? I mean, it was all women, but you're talking about the whole sector and how to support and empower one another and grow within the industry. So thank you for allowing me to go. Really
great,
appreciate
great
it.
Great report. Great report. Any other commissioner items? I'd just like to add one. A lot of the staff have left the room, but on my recent trip down south, I went through two highly intensely utilized areas for wind power. Interstate 10 between the Arizona state line and Los Angeles, right by Palm Desert. I now understand what people are talking about when they say they don't want their view shed impacted. It does have an impact. Too much wind power can impact your psyche when you drive through it. It's not pretty. I understand the need for wind power, but I also understand the need for us to be conscious about how we're impacting our environment around us visually. I think there's an important lesson there. I think most people think our dams are beautiful, but I'm not so certain about the wind power, especially when I came up over Biggs Junction on 97, and wow, that's we're changing our landscape before our eyes in search of sustainable energy, and I think we need to have a lot deeper thoughts about the long-term impacts. That's all I'm going to say.
Randy, if I was, I want to step in and just, support you in that as well, because another site that is really eye-opening is Mojave. And you go to Mojave, and it's in the Mojave Desert, and this town was built because of wind power. And you can see the natural evolution of wind power over the course of our history, and from the little small ones to the really big ones, and it trans through a valley, up over a ridge, and down another valley again, and it's amazing to see so much of that. And it does. You're right. It does impact, the landscape. And I think it's worth, commenting on these things, because, people that aren't getting out and getting around and seeing these things. And I think there's another place there. Is it Idaho or something like that? They have a solar farm, and it reflects onto this tower, and you see this beam. It just looks so futuristic with this bright light out in the middle of nowhere, and there's a couple of them there, and it's solar, and you have this pristine desert, and all of a sudden you got this thing, and it goes for miles and miles of solar panels. And so you're trading one thing for another.
Yeah.
And so we're going to see a lot more of it.
Yep. Okay. Any other commissioner items?
Well, if I might add one other thing. What I found fascinating at Waputa, happened to be a little party room with our commissioners around, and next door was party room with fire commissioners.
Oh,
so didn't know who they were, but went and knocked and introduced myself. And similar issues. They're struggling with the whole electrification of vehicles for a whole different reason, but having to do with the fire issues and building code. My understanding is down the pike here pretty soon, garages are going to have to be basically like cases that can contain fires, because when these batteries burn, they're chemical fires that are not easy to put out, and so the structural risk is significant, and what our fire commissioners are up against is huge. So I was thinking it might be good for PUD commissioners and fire commissioners to do a little collaboration. Together we might be able to go forward with a more powerful, pardon the pun, powerful message.
Interesting.
Food for thought.
Yeah, it is food for thought. Okay. Now, any other commissioner?
Okay, I'm done.
All right. Follow up on delegation of action items.
We have three items. Just we're still working on from the February 6th board meeting. Kelly Scott is going to provide further information on who may be impacted by the proposed decarbonization bill. Ryan Baker will provide a schedule of parks projects along with budget information for those. And then Ryan Baker will also provide ideas on how to increase local usage at BB Bridge Campground.
Super. Any delegation from today?
We didn't capture any new ones unless we missed one.
A couple of them got answered during the meeting. Yeah. Okay, cool. I see no public, so I don't think there's any additional public comment. Are there any other matters of general business that may necessarily come before the commission before we move into executive session? Hearing none, we will move into executive session then to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, to consider information regarding the infrastructure and security of computer and telecommunications networks, security and service recovery plans, security risk assessments, and security test results to the extent that they identify specific system vulnerabilities pursuant to the RCWs, to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause a likelihood of increased price as authorized by the RCWs, and to consider the minimum price at which real estate will be offered for sale or lease when public knowledge regarding such consideration would cause the likelihood of a decreased price as authorized by the RCWs for approximately 120 minutes?
Correct. Sorry about that.
Okay. So do we need a 5-minute break or not? Okay. We can move right in then. We're coming out of executive session. It is 3:50 p.m. No votes were taken. No decisions were made. Is there any additional business to come before the Board of Commissioners? Hearing none, we'll stand adjourned.